hard as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to have Pat LaMarche from Safe Harbor come talk to us a little bit about the services that Safe Harbor provides and the help that they give to some homeless folks in our area. A problem that, I got to tell you, is from all accounts getting worse. The funding is not there. The help that these agencies need, not there. And we're hearing from the state, we're hearing from local governments, cut, cut, cut. So another one of these things where you go, we can only fund this help when times are good. I'm not there with you yet. So it'll be an interesting conversation with her. Also, George Hartwick, Dauphin County Commissioner, is going to be here talking about the election. Also, Ryan Sanders, candidate for the 19th Congressional District running against Todd Platts, will be here talking about his run. And, of course, Dan Honorato will be here in the last hour to talk about the gubernatorial race. And all of this stuff comes down, really honestly and truthfully, everything we're going to talk about tonight comes down to you getting out and voting, you taking the time to do your civic duty. And it's not like it's difficult. It's not like this is, you know, walking uphill 14 miles both ways, knee-deep in snow. This is simply going to the voting poll, casting your vote, and maybe doing a little educational stuff beforehand. Maybe find out where the candidates stand. Because the reality is for the longest time, what we've heard Republicans, you know what, we don't want people voting. We just don't want everybody to get out and vote. Because the Republicans know, if everybody goes and votes, they lose.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
The late Paul Weyrich, he, big, big conservative, one of the people who founded the Heritage Foundation, talking to a group of about 20,000 Southern Baptist ministers. That was back in 1980. They've been doing this stuff for years, and their mantra has always been, hold down the vote, suppress the vote. Make sure those people, make sure they don't vote. And, you know, the more you take a look at this stuff, the more you see what's going on. Every right-wing talk show host in the country, anti-government. Everything is, government's bad. They're out to screw you. These government people, they're no darn good. We don't need government. Get rid of it. So that you think there's something wrong with your government. So you stay home. You abstain. You know, I had a government teacher when I was in high school. I'll never forget him. He's a great guy. Just a brilliant man. And he facetiously, he said, you know what? All you guys just don't bother. Don't even register to vote. Stay home. Don't bother. This way my vote is stronger. The less number of you who go out and vote, the less I have to compete with you. My vote is therefore stronger, and I have greater power. Now, of course, he was being facetious, because everybody should get out and vote. But you got these folks who are saying, oh, you know, we don't want those people, but we want to hold that down. In this state, there are about 1.5 million more registered Democrats. So if everybody who's registered votes, and not to say, you know, unless you've got a really bad Democratic candidate that the Democrats run away from, Democrats generally will win. So what the Republicans have to do, and it's part of their strategy, they have to come out and say, look, the Democrats are evil. Just stay home. Don't bother. Don't bother voting. Don't come out. And they have to make things difficult at the polls. So don't expect if someone comes and starts harassing you at the polls on Tuesday. And don't let them do that either. But it's interesting, the tricks that they play. And we're going to talk about a couple of those today. Representative Dennis Kucinich said today, we can get out there and make our voices heard, or we can let the forces of nihilism take over, the people who want to destroy this country. The Cleveland Democrat warned progressives that a Republican takeover of the House of Representatives, a likely scenario according to election experts, could surrender the levers of power to megamaniacal neoconservatives who are more in need of mental attention. There's no question about it, he said. We have to vote. And we do. We have to get out there and vote. And what I found interesting today, remember, we've been playing this ad. Let me play it again.
It's an election year, so here come more promises about immigration reform. Last time, President Obama and the Democratic leadership made a commitment that immigration reform would be passed within a year. But 2 years have gone by, and nothing. Not even a vote in Congress.
Not that the Republicans
with
didn't
a Democratic
hold
president and supermajorities in both chambers of Congress, they have no excuses. Clearly, the Democratic leadership betrayed us. And now, when they need our votes, they are at it again with more empty promises.
At it again.
Aren't you tired of politicians playing games with your future? Do you really think it will be different this time? They had 2 years to do something. It was all talk and no action.
What should I do? Tell me what to do.
This November, we need to send a message to all politicians.
Yeah.
If they didn't keep their promise on immigration reform, then they can't count on our vote.
Nope.
Democratic leaders must pay for broken promises and betrayals. If we just go on supporting them again this November, they will keep playing games with our future and taking our vote for granted. Don't vote this November.
Huh?
This is the only way to send them a clear message.
Don't vote.
You can no longer take us for granted.
Don't vote? Is that what you want me to do? Don't vote? Well, we found the guy who's behind the ad. And it turns out the guy behind this ad, the Latinos for Reform Don't Vote ad, it turns out he's not taking his own advice. Robert De Posada told BDT.com that he voted absentee on Wednesday in Virginia. Mr. De Posada, the president of Latinos for Reform, along one of these long-lined, well-funded, Republican-backed hit groups that decided it was best for reform to send a strong message and not vote. I mean, think about that. We need to reform things, so don't do anything. Now, that's reform you can believe in. Take that to the bank and smoke it or whatever. I mean, imagine that. So he was asked if he was being hypocritical. And our Latinos for Reform president, Mr. De Posada, says, no. The group was only telling people not to vote for Congress. Oh, so that's what it is. Just vote for everybody else. De Posada, again, he was interviewed by DBD's Mike Cani, and he said this, when you look at the substance of the ad, the website when you look at the press release, we're very clear. Go vote for governor or whoever. Just don't vote for those who betrayed you. So if I'm getting this right, if Republican logic holds clear here, if it holds here, voting for a Republican would really, really be a bad idea then, right? Because they're not encouraging you to vote for anybody else. Just don't vote. So if you go to the Latinos for Reform website, you can find the small print on the bottom of the second page of this PDF that they have. There's a link on their front page. And it says, quote, when you cast your vote for governor, mayor, school board, etc., be counted, but do not vote for Congress this November. This is the only way to make sure they understand that we will no longer vote for them when we get nothing in return. Instead of, you know, mounting some kind of a real challenge, all they're really trying to do is disenfranchise people. Again, trying to push the vote down. Because even these folks have to know that the Republicans are not the safe haven for the Latino community. They are not the safe haven for the minority community at all. They're a bunch of angry white people. A bunch of angry white people who have finally woken up to the fact that everything that they believed in was stolen from them by a bunch of other angry white people on Wall Street. It's kind of an interesting scenario. And I've said this before. I've said it 1,000 times. I don't have a problem with minorities. I don't have a problem with black people. I've never been robbed by, you know, never been stuck up. I've never had anything stolen from me. It's the white bankers who've been robbing me for years. You know, they scare me to death. Also, down in Texas, and you're going to love this, down in Texas, a group, nobody knows who, they've been handing out these flyers in African American communities down near Houston, Texas, according to KTRK. The flyer, which were handed out nearly, you know, at every of the early voting locations Tuesday night, claimed that, quote, and this is reading right from it, Republicans are trying to trick us when you vote straight Democrat. It is actually voting for the Republicans, and your vote doesn't count. So this is what they're telling you. If you vote straight Democrat, you're voting for the Republicans, and then it doesn't count. So I'm kind of curious which one it is. Either it votes for Republicans or it doesn't count. I'm not sure yet. It goes on to say we're urging everyone to vote for Bill White. And Bill White is in huge letters so that the black people can see the white name. A vote for Bill White is a vote for the entire Democratic ticket. We have fought too hard to let Republicans use voting machines to deny us our basic rights. We must guard the change and not vote straight ticket Democrat. Yes, we can. I mean, so this is obviously illegal because it's flat out lies and it's flat out just plain BS. But this is the kind of thing that goes on. And look, you know, there's part of me that says if you're dumb enough to read this and vote for just Bill White, well, I don't know. But there are people out there. There are forces out there. There are hucksters, well-paid hucksters out there who sit and develop this stuff so that they can hold down the vote. They can suppress the vote because they know the only way Republicans win in this part of the country, and really the country as a whole, is if you suppress the vote. You suppress the number of people who get out to the polls. They know that. So, of course, they're going to make things as difficult as they possibly can. Which, again, is why Acorn had to be taken down. Because they were organizing the poor. They were organizing the working class. They were organizing the desperation class. And the wealthy, they can't have that. Let's take a quick break. We're right back. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Stick around. We're right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show. We want the world and we want
just right. The Rick Smith Show. Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
If we weren't in the game would already be lost. But we're in the game. With all the work that's been put in, all the money that's been spent, and we think well spent, we think we're making some real headway.
AFSCME President Gerald McEntee on Labor's powerful efforts to support working family-friendly candidates November 2nd. But McEntee says there's still a danger that the House will go Republican.
If Boehner becomes head of the House, we will see, in our judgment, no support for working men and women, not just labor, but working men and women in general. He's a friend of Wall Street.
McEntee says President Obama often describes how he found the economy like a battered car in a ditch when he took office, driven there by Republicans. McEntee says Labor's political effort is to help Obama and Democrats avoid letting Republicans crash the economy again.
Obama's been trying to get that car out of the ditch, and we're trying to support him in that effort. We're middle-income workers, and it's union and non-union middle-income workers that are trying to give that support to governors, to House members, to Senate Democratic members as well. Turn this country around and get that car back in drive instead of reverse.
With massive amounts of corporate money anonymously flooding into campaigns nationwide as a result of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, one group has launched an effort to fix that, amending the U.S. Constitution. Kaya Rabena is with the South Central Wisconsin chapter of the national group Move to Amend.
We think that it's important to actually amend the Constitution to undo Citizens United, because the Citizens United decision was based on two ideas, that corporations are people and money is speech. And if you try to fix this legislatively, you run into the problem that the Supreme Court will strike down any laws that are passed to actually say, you know, corporations should not be considered persons and money should not be considered speech. You also can't rely on the Supreme Court to fix this in the future, because they might not, but even if they do, it could be overturned by a future court. So really what we need to do is amend the Constitution to make it clear that that corporations are not people and money is not speech.
New York City Councilman Oliver Coppell says a $1 million study by the city's Economic Development Corporation on a living wage proposal was done by people biased against the very concept of a living wage.
Instead of going to a group of experts who are neutral and who would do a study without bias, we believe that this study starts off with the conclusion already determined.
Labor, clergy, and community groups are fighting to pass a $10 per hour minimum wage for jobs created on development projects that are done with the help of public subsidies in New York City. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
I don't know if it's a party or not, but this AP article has me just looking into my crystal ball to what we're going to see here in the future in Pennsylvania. If we choose poorly on November 2nd, or if we have a bunch of people who stay home, I'm telling you, you got to get out and you got to do your civic duty. You got to get out there and you got to vote. But the AP story today, Indiana's budget crunch. Now, remember, we're going to have a massive budget crunch next year when we, no matter who is sitting in the governor's seat, we're going to have some big problems. So having someone who took a no-tax pledge seems to me to be very short-sighted and just plain stupid. But that's a whole nother discussion. The AP article says Indiana's budget crunch has become so severe that some state workers have suggested leaving severely disabled people at homeless shelters if they cannot be cared for at home. They said workers at Indiana's Bureau of Developmental Disability Service have told parents that one option they have when families can no longer care for children at home and haven't received Medicaid waivers that pay for services to support the disabled people living independently, that maybe, you know what, dump them off. Marcus Barlow, a spokesman for the Family and Social Service Administration, the umbrella agency that includes the Bureau, said suggesting homeless shelters is not agency policy and workers who did so would be disciplined. However, Becky Holliday of Battleground, Indiana, said that that's exactly what happened to her when she called to ask about the son's waiver. She has a 22-year-old son who has epilepsy, autism, and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Holliday, she's a school nurse, said she and her husband were going to go bankrupt because they can't pay for the services themselves. So Cameron, the 22-year-old son, spends most of his day, and this is amazing to me, sitting in the stepfather's truck while the stepfather works for one of the municipalities, because they can't leave him at home. They can't afford to have someone come and sit and take care of him. So what you have is a situation where these fleas, they're left high and dry. Now remember what happens in conservative world. If you can't privatize it and make a profit at it, it doesn't get done. So folks like these, they're left out on an island with no options. And you stop and think about, hey, you know, just drop your kid off at the homeless shelter. Holliday said it's heart-wrenching as a parent to watch. They say we are people and they are people, referring to her son and others with disabilities. They have lives that are worth something. There have been no confirmed cases of families actually dumping their loved ones off at homeless shelters because Indiana wouldn't provide care. But, I mean, how would you like calling somebody up and saying, hey, you know, I'm at my wit's end. You know, I've got this child that needs help. Help me do some. Well, and the response you get is, well, you know, we can't help. We don't have the resources. Maybe if you took them to a homeless shelter, you would. And I understand it. The homeless shelter would throw its hand up, but I don't know what to do. And then you might have some activity. You might have a news report. You may have something pop up. The article goes on to say some families have been waiting on lists for waivers for 10 years. The list there in Indiana contains more than 20,000 names. And one advocacy group predicted that they will only grow longer because their governor ordered budget cuts that have eliminated 2,000 of those waiver slots. So right away, you're talking about another 2,000 people who are being cut from the rolls. The article goes on to say budget cuts also have resulted in the state moving foster children with disabilities to low-cost programs that do not provide services for special needs and eliminating a grocery benefit for hundreds of developmentally disabled adults. So we're balancing our budgets. And again, this is going to be a theme next year. I'm telling you right now, the theme right now that you're going to see, mark this down, because this is what conservative world looks like. And I know what they say. Oh, let the churches do it. Folks, this is a big problem. The churches cannot do it. The churches have not done it. They cannot do it. They will not do it. They may want to, but it's want and actually doing two entirely different things. State lawmakers in Indiana say they have also received reports from several people who were told they could abandon their children at homeless shelters. Representative Susan Crouch, she is a Republican from Evansville, said she found it deplorable that people are being told to go to homeless shelters. Not that she's doing anything about it, but it's deplorable. Some parents said homeless shelters have also been suggested or threatened as an option by private care providers. An option. Get used to that. Because that's conservative for you're on your own. You have the option. You have the option of paying for it for yourself, all by yourself. Yes, you have the option of losing your home to care for your child. You have the option. Don't you feel so much better knowing that you have an option? Even if that option is no real option. Donna Minich of Bloomington, Indiana, said the Indiana Department of Education funding for residential treatment for her 18-year-old daughter, Sabrina, is due to run out on Sunday. She said officials at DeMar Services Incorporated of Indianapolis told her during a meeting that unless she took Sabrina home with her, the agency would drop her off at a homeless shelter because she's 18. She's 18. She's no longer a child. She can't be considered a ward of the court. She's an adult. There's the door, honey. And this girl suffers from bipolar disorder, anxiety attacks. She's attempted suicide. She's run away a number of times. She's threatened people. So where is she eventually going to end up, do you think? With this type of behavior, what do you think is going to happen? Because the family's saying, look, it's not a viable option. We can't take her home. Where do you think she's going to end up? Prison. Because she's going to hurt somebody or herself. Prison. Remember, folks, we're turning into Desperation Nation. We're turning into hooray for me and screw everybody else. And we're going to balance our budgets on the backs of people like this. The people who can least defend themselves because they're easy targets. They're easy marks. And I'm telling you right now, if Tom Corbett's elected and we have the Republicans control our state legislature, these cuts are going to be deep, wide, and painful. Not for them, not for the very wealthy in the state. No, no, no. For the people who can at least afford it. People like these folks. Is that the kind of society that we want to be? I just don't think so. You know, I'm not a big Bible thumper. I'm not, you know, a big go out there and preach kind of guy. I have my beliefs. I keep them generally to myself. I don't believe this is a Christian nation, although a lot of my T-Twizzler friends like to shake their book at me and quote, you know, different lines out of context. I get that, if that's what would get you by. But, you know, at some point you have to say that we have to care for our neighbor. At some point you have to say that the golden rule does apply, or at least the silver rule, to treat no one any worse than you'd want them to treat you. If you were in that situation, you would want some help. At least that's my thought. Before we take a break, some good news. I never like to leave a segment on a down note. So here's some real good news. ExxonMobil today announced soaring profits, 55% in the third quarter, driven in part by higher energy prices. So congratulations, you're paying more at the pump so that they can have a little more in their pocket. The U.S. energy giant reported net earnings of $7.35 billion, a better-than-expected advance from the $4.73 billion this time last year. So, wow, almost big numbers. Earnings of $1.44 a share in July through September topped the forecast of $1.39. So revenue surged 16% to $95.29 billion. So you're spending a lot of money. Good for you. ExxonMobil is the world's largest non-state oil company. They said that strong performance was due to higher crude oil and natural gas prices. So you're paying more out of your pocket. Good for you. And they're sharing more with their shareholders. The Irving, Texas-based company said returned more than $5 billion. Returned more than $5 billion to shareholders in the third quarter through dividends and share purchases. They shared more than $5 billion. They shared it with their shareholders. They shared it. You know what sharing is in their world? That's called redistributing wealth. That means money's coming out of your pocket and going into theirs. So doesn't it feel good? Don't you feel just good knowing that we made our very wealthy even wealthier? I know I feel better. I just feel so warm inside. That's what I feel. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this with Pat LaMarche. She's a representative from Safe Harbor, a homeless shelter in the Carlisle area. Stick around. We're right back after this. 1-8.
Blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Hey, Bucko. Stop whining about this sour economy and start thinking about the plight of others. For example, arms dealers. You've probably paid no attention to the hard fact that the global recession caused worldwide arms sales to plummet by 8.5% last year, pinching the profits of U.S. weapons pushers. The only saving grace in this downbeat news is that America's glorious arms industry did retain its position as the number one supplier of weapons to the world. We still control nearly 40% of the global market, with Russia a distant second. But before you set off a mess of fireworks in celebration, note that the U.S. sales in 2009 were down by more than $15 billion from the previous year. On the upside, the developing world is still in a buying mood. Last year, such emerging nations as Brazil, Venezuela, Iraq, India, and Vietnam poured billions into purchases of military playthings that go boom. Again, U.S. dealers were the big winners, controlling a third of the arms trade in this robust market. The greatest news for American purveyors of killing machines, however, is Iran. This rising Mideast power has spooked the U.S. and Israel. So, in the vague hope of countering Iran's growing punch, the White House and Congress are about to okay a blockbuster sale to the monarchical rulers of Saudi Arabia. Some $90 billion worth of top-line fighter jets, helicopters, naval armaments, and other sophisticated war machinery would go to the Saudis, the largest single sale of U.S. arms ever. The theory is that somehow or other, maybe, possibly, sometime in the future, this escalation of military testosterone in the explosive Mideast might produce harmony. This is Jim Hightower saying, good luck with that. But hey, if it jacks up profits for our arms dealers, what's not to like about it?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Get government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good. But is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party Pledge to America says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up. And returning veterans? Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard, the same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now.
Well, you know, it should. It should be starting right now. People should be fed up. Should be angry, frustrated, and not the anger and the frustration we're seeing. People should be angry that the American dream is being snatched from them as we speak. And not because their government is taxing them. No, because the very wealthy are taxing them. You know, I look at that thing with PP&L, and it just drives me insane that nobody you talk to seems to get it. You know, if the state government would have said, we're going to put a 36% tax on your electricity bill, there would be riots. But since it was a private for-profit interest who hands out dividends to shareholders, that 36% increase was seen as just a day at the office. Just doing business, even though they had made $1 billion in profit the year before. Kind of makes you wonder. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. A few years ago, we did this event called Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays. And we had done this event where we lived in a parking lot of this grocery store for, I think the first year was 8 days, second year was 9 days. And we wanted people to come and donate food and money and whatever they could to help Project Share, Carlisle Cares, and Safe Harbor, which was one of the homeless shelters in the area. And I got to be honest with you. Growing up in a city, Cleveland's not a big, big city, but it's a big city. Growing up in a place like that, you see homeless, you see a lot of the problems that cities have. But moving to a place like Carlisle, I don't think most people realize what kind of problems are in our right in our backyards that either we're too busy to notice or we just don't. And you know, some of the things that I learned by doing these events, and we're going to attempt to put something together this year. We're working at it now, trying to get the approvals, because that's always a pain in the neck. But some of the people that I've met doing this, just wonderful people. And the homeless folks that I met don't fit into your very neat little stereotypes, your prejudices, the prejudice that I would have had even. Of people who are, you know, either crazy or lazy or alcoholics. Now, you met a couple people who had some mental handicaps. You met a couple of people who may have had a problem with the libations. But for the most part, the folks that I met had some mental illness issues, some real problems. That I look at programs like this thing in Indiana, the deep, wide cuts that are coming. What do we do? What do we do as a society? Can the charity class take this? Can the charity class provide that social safety net that we need, that where we say nobody falls below this line, nobody who wants a safe, warm place to sleep at night will go homeless? I mean... It's just one of those things that frustrates me. And my wife had gone to Safe Harbor, and we're waiting for Pat Lamarche. She's a representative from Safe Harbor, one of the homeless shelters in the area to get in contact with her. She went over there the other day to drop some things off, and I encourage everybody, if you've got shampoo or personal hygiene things, especially the small bottles, they could really use that stuff, especially now because times are tight. But, you know, you look at this, and my wife went over there to drop off some things that we had that we didn't need, and she said in just a couple minutes that she was there, they had to turn away two families. Families. And going back to my Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays events, I remember one family in particular. And I got to be honest, I don't think I'll ever forget that day. It was a stinking hot day. It was like 95 degrees. And this couple and their daughter was the exact same age as my daughter. And the kids were there. My kids were there, and these folks came to, you know, see if they could get some help and to find if I knew anything. And I remember them walking up to us, and you could tell that they hadn't showered in a couple of days and that they were having a rough go of it. Their car was packed with stuff because that's where they were living. They were sleeping in their car because they had nowhere to go. The husband was going to start a job in a couple of days. He had found not a great job, but a minimum wage job that was going to help them get on their feet. He just needed that hand to move forward. Now, this is a family. And my wife had come back from the grocery store and had brought ice cream sandwiches back for my kids and for some of the people who were standing around. And, you know, this little girl and my daughter, they bonded. They were having ice cream and they were playing like little kids, like they do. And the parents were just so uncomfortable, and they just, you could see the pride that they had lost. And I remember standing there thinking, going, you know, that could be me. This could be my daughter. And I remember the look on the girl's face when the parents said it was time to go. because she wanted to stay in place. She wanted to be a child. And it just, it ate at me, and it eats at me to this day, which is why I think it's so important, so vitally important that we have a government that takes care of this stuff, that we don't leave it up to the charity class. We don't leave it up to goodwill. Goodwill helps. Charity helps. But there's got to be a line in the sand that we as a society say, you know what? We're not going to let families sleep in their cars. We've got empty warehouses all over the place. You mean to tell me we can't convert some of those buildings into shelters? We can't convert some of these abandoned buildings? Makes no sense to me. And what it tells me is it's not a priority. And when we come back to these budget cuts next year, and I'm telling you we're going to, that's an easy line to slice off. Because they don't have lobbyists. They're not voting. They're not the constituency that politicians are worried about. They have very few voices. And if you listen to the people on the right demonize them. Well, they were, you know, stupid or lazy, or they just made the wrong choices, or on and on and on. And what I'm saying, as a society, we have to draw that line. We have to say, you know what? We're not going to let that happen. And yeah, I believe in personal responsibility. I believe in and being responsible for yourself and doing for yourself. But you know what? Sometimes, like this family that we met, sometimes things just work against you. And you need that hand. You need that help. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of the armies of salvation.
Well, you know, we don't see those lines anymore. We're not allowed. We're not allowed to see the welfare lines. We're not allowed to see the unemployment lines, because heaven forbid we recognize that there may be a problem. Heaven forbid we have an opportunity to organize those people. The unemployed, the disenfranchised, the folks who the Republicans for years have been trying to disenfranchise and keep from voting. And I know it's a rant for a whole nother day and one I've done 1,000 times, but that's why Acorn had to be taken out, and that's why they were taken out. Frustrating stuff. I got Pat LaMarche on the phone. She's a representative of Safe Harbor They are one of Carlisle's homeless shelters. Pat, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
You know, I was telling the story that my wife had brought a couple things into your to your shelter, and she was just distraught by the fact that you had to turn a couple of people away just in the minutes that she was there. So I guess my big question is what are you doing with folks that you don't have room for?
Well, we're actually selling them to China. No, sorry. that was supposed to be funny. We turn people away every single day. We're actually Cumberland County's largest homeless shelter. We house about 100 people a night. What we do with people we turn away is we send them to CARES, which is another homeless shelter. That's the one where people get a mat to sleep on the floor of a church
right.
at night. And then, of course, many people sleep in the woods. Actually, Central Pennsylvania is a really nice place to be homeless, rurally homeless, because you have options that are not, you know, the corner of 7th and Park Avenue. You know, you have real options for an actual comfortable place outside to sleep, if that's a possible concept.
Right. You know, we had done this event for a couple of years where we stayed in a cardboard box in a parking lot of the supermarket, and I got to meet a lot of people who were homeless in the area. And it really opened my eyes to the problem, to how big the problem is in a small place like Carlisle. But also,
well, you know, Carlisle's really an amazing place. All of Cumberland County is. I have traveled the country. In fact, I lived in homeless shelters all over the country and wrote a book about it. And there's nothing like this place. And most shelters in the United States of America, I would rather be on the street. The problem is that they've criminalized poverty. So if you're on the street, you'll be arrested in most urban centers. So you have to go to a shelter. But for the most part, shelters are horrible, you know, terrible places. That's not the case in Cumberland County, and I think that's because this South Central Pennsylvania area has a generosity of spirit that I have never seen before.
Let me ask you exactly what is Safe Harbor? What do you do? What's your mission? All that stuff.
We have three types of shelter. We have emergency shelter. We take single women, and we take families. We're one of only about five shelters in the United States of America that will take adult males and take adolescent boys. Usually if a family presents itself with a dad in the family or, say, a guy 16, those people are told they have to separate from the family and go to a single men's shelter.
Right.
We don't do that, and basically, I was joke with people that it's because of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It's those reindeer games, you know, where you get four guys in the same kitchen all trying to cook dinner, and the next thing you know, somebody's having a fight. Well, we have round-the-clock security, as most shelters do, and we just work really hard to make sure that a 13-year-old boy isn't sent to a single-man shelter, you know, that he gets to stay with his family.
Right.
And then that we keep dads in families because dads are important people. So I feel like I'm really lucky because I'm at what should be, in my opinion, what is a model shelter for the country, because we have that role of the male is not just considered a problem. He's also considered an incredible asset. The single men in the area don't come to us because there's another shelter that provides for single men, and we try not to duplicate services.
Right.
Then we have a transitional shelter where people can stay for up to a year. Our emergency shelter is just 90 days. People that come there have very strict rules, curfews, no visitors. You know, your job is to make a plan. If you get to our transitional shelter where you can stay for a year or more, if there are extenuating circumstances, we had a woman in nursing school. We let her stay about 18 months, she and her children. If you get to our transitional shelter, you can have guests. It's your place. We're in the old James Wilson Hotel, so you have your own bathroom, which is also unheard of in a shelter. You have a door that locks, which that sort of privacy. When I stayed in a shelter in Providence, Rhode Island, I woke up to the sound of someone cutting another person with a razor blade. That stuff doesn't happen in our place, you know, because everybody's got a private area. And then we have three buildings of permanent housing. We house mostly elderly people there, people who have a $700 a month Social Security check, and that's certainly not going to pay rent. Most of those rents are a couple hundred bucks a month, and also they have us to check in on them. My boss, Wendell, who's the director of the shelter, saved a guy's life about 3 months ago because nobody had heard from him for 4 or 5 weeks. He was in our permanent housing, so we didn't have a caseworker because you're treated like you're, you know, independent.
Right. Right.
But Wendell was worried about him, went in, found him. He'd had some pretty serious health issues, hadn't been out of bed in 3 or 4 days. And he's very elderly, veteran. So those are sort of the cases that end up in our permanent housing.
Let me ask you, where does your funding come from? Do you get much state money, much federal money? How do you guys sustain?
About 25% of our money is government money, whether that's state or federal. All the rest of it is private contributions, and that's the hardest part right now. I mean, we've had some pretty severe cuts. We just lost $30,000 in state money. Everybody's lost state money. I mean, that's the note you can hear from any not-for-profit. But our problem is it's that much harder to make it up right now because we have a population now that is the people who used to help us. Usually, when you talk about homeless people, you talk about young women in trouble, you know, families, you know, a couple of kids, a 2-year-old, a 3-month-old. Right now, I've got at least 7, maybe 10 families with middle to high school aged kids and, you know, intact families, both parents. And these are lower middle class people who never thought they'd be standing in front of a shelter because of the big economic decline of 2008.
You know, in the last segment, I was telling a story about when we had done our homeless event, and the family that came to our little area, and just how that really just grabbed me and has stuck with me, because you know their daughter was the same age as my daughter.
Yeah.
And that could have been any one of us.
Yeah. Well, that is the really big problem, and that's the other thing is generational poverty is almost impossible to break. And you know, I always joke, and Tiger Woods is never a good name to say anymore. But the fact remains, Tiger Woods became the world's best golfer because from the time he was 2, his dad took him outside every day and played golf. Well, in generational poverty, if you're taught every day how to absolutely barely survive, how your best friend that's going to provide food is far more likely to be a dumpster than a grocery store, you don't have the skill sets and the tools necessary to break that cycle. And that's probably the other really big thing about Safe Harbor is we have on staff caseworkers who do a sort of triage and figure out what you need next because for some people, they can't apply for a job because they don't have the social skills, or they can apply, but they can't succeed because they don't have the social skills necessary to get from one end of that interview to the next end of the interview without offending the person interviewing them. So it's a whole pile of issues that are in there. And then, of course, these are all the issues you talk about all the time.
Yep.
The minimum wage. I have 3 parents right now with children in my shelter who work virtually full-time. Of course, they're not able to work full-time because they're employer, at power retailers, fast food joints. Well, you're not putting a cheeseburger through a window and providing a home for your family. That's not going to happen. So these aren't lazy people. They're hardworking people. And, again, the nice thing about Carlisle is this community seems to get that. When 75% of your funding is charity, for want of a better term, and we're still going, you know, we're still doing well. That's because we live in a community that doesn't forget its neighbors, and that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Let me ask you this. I understand you guys are having an event coming up. Can you tell me what the event is?
Yeah, actually, we have 2 big ones, but the one I really, really need folks to, like, give us a call about in the next couple of days is it's called The Night Without a Tuck. And that doesn't mean you should be naked. It just means that you should take the money you would have spent on a tux or a fancy dress and haul an old one out of the cupboard and come dance and have a great dinner with us. It's at the Hotel Carlisle. It's November the 6th. They can call me at work, 249-2200. That's 249-2200. My name's Pat. And sell you a couple of tickets. They're $55 a person. We've got some great silent auction items. But really, it's a great opportunity to come out, have a nice evening, and help an awful lot of people in your community who need you. I mean, every time we sell 3 of those tickets, after all the expenses are paid, we can keep an entire family in the shelter for one night. So, you know, if you bring your husband and your boyfriend, you're all set. You're paying the way for a person to spend the night.
And that's a great thing. We'll make sure we put a link up to that on our website at therickssmithshow.com. You also have a sleep-out night, I understand.
We do. We have a thing that's called Night Without a Home. This is our eighth year in a row that we always do that at Dickinson College. And that's when the children, I'd say age 12 or so through high school, you know, they tough it out for a night. And that sounds easy. Oh, I think I'll go camping, you know, but it's really not. I mean, these kids make box villages and they sleep at, we do it at Dickinson College in Carlisle. But the floor, the ground's uncomfortable and it's cold. And even if you bring a whole pile of blankets, you're still cold. And for one night, an awful lot of kids who may not want for anything stop and think about somebody actually sleeping outside. And aside from the fact that the kids raise money to do it, they really get it. And it's really impressive. I was at my first one of these last year because I came from LA. And I was impressed. We had about 300 kids sleeping outside, and I thought, wow, you know, literally in any other community, you'd have 15 kids. A whole pile of kids like that who want to sleep outside and find out what it feels like to be uncomfortable because somebody else lives that way.
When we were doing our events, we were selling nights in the box for $20 a night. We'd gotten several extra refrigerator boxes, and we're renting them out by the night for just the exact experience that you're talking about.
Yeah.
One of the homeless guys that I met, and you know, that just popped into my head, he said, you know, because he came and stayed with us for the time we were there, and he said that for the first time in a long time, he felt safe. And that's something I think a lot of us take for granted, this feeling of security, this feeling of safety.
Yeah, that really is important. And then the feeling of pride or confidence or comfort is another one. I mean, if I could tell you the number one facial expression I see in the course of my day, it's humiliation. People are ashamed of things they can't even control. And that's the hardest thing. But I got to tell you, I got the greatest job in the world. I get to, in the course of 5 minutes of any given day, make someone's life, else's life a little bit easier. And anyone who wants to help, I mean, there's no greater rush than that, than realizing that, you know, by stopping your own life down for 5 or 10 minutes, you've actually made someone else's life that much better.
We got about
Pretty spectacular.
That is spectacular. You have about 2 minutes left. Make the pitch. How do we get people involved? How do I get involved if our listeners want to help? What do you tell people?
Well, first of all, this is the season. Tis the season. This is when people bring their kids up to care about somebody. You know, that you do it year round, but it really strikes home in the fall. Christmas is coming, you're thinking, I want my kids to learn what this is like. We get a lot of attention at this time of year. But the bottom line is, I got a $4,000 a month electric bill. And that means that if folks don't really dig down deep, we don't make it. And in order for us to make it, we don't want you to be hurting. We want you to be able to part with whatever's comfortable for you. And maybe that's only a buck or two. But if you do have a few extra dollars of disposable income, come dance with us. I mean, come have fun. We're going to have a few of our homeless residents there that have been sponsored by our board of directors. They've bought them tickets. You know, folks that are really comfortable coming out and talking to you about what their life is like. But Jasmine, that great band that plays locally, is going to be playing, and the food's going to be great at Hotel Carlisle, and we would love to see you. It's a fun way to do something really great and go home feeling good about yourself.
Can we, since you brought some the people, you just said that you're sponsoring a couple people to go from the shelter. Let's say I wanted to sponsor a couple to go. I gave you $110. Can you do that?
Absolutely.
I will have a check.
Absolutely.
I will have a check for you tomorrow.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Rick.
So that we can sponsor two people to make their life just a little bit happier.
Oh, that's great. And we'll get them. We are in really close ties with Dress for Success. We'll get them some great clothes, and they can come out and play with us.
Outstanding. And November 6th is the event, Night Without a Tux. Also, November 20th, Dickinson College, they're holding their Night Without a Home Sleep Out. I encourage everyone to take a look at it. 249-2200. Pat, I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Rick.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back with George Hartwick, Dauphin County Commissioner. Right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show. Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
If we weren't in the game would already be lost. But we're in the game. With all the work that's been put in, all the money that's been spent, and we think well spent, we think we're making some real headway.
AFSCME President Gerald McEntee on Labor's powerful efforts to support working family-friendly candidates November 2nd. But McEntee says there's still a danger that the House will go Republican.
If Boehner becomes head of the House, we will see, in our judgment, no support for working men and women, not just labor, but working men and women in general. He's a friend of Wall Street.
McEntee says President Obama often describes how he found the economy like a battered car in a ditch when he took office, driven there by Republicans. McEntee says labor's political effort is to help Obama and Democrats avoid letting Republicans crash the economy again.
Obama's been trying to get that car out of the ditch, and we're trying to support him in that effort. We're middle-income workers, and it's union and non-union middle-income workers that are trying to give that support to governors, to House members, to Senate Democratic members as well. Turn this country around and get that car back in drive instead of reverse.
With massive amounts of corporate money anonymously flooding into campaigns nationwide as a result of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, one group has launched an effort to fix that by amending the U.S. Constitution. Kaya Rabena is with the South Central Wisconsin chapter of the national group Move to Amend.
We think that it's important to actually amend the Constitution to undo Citizens United because the Citizens United decision was based on two ideas, that corporations are people and money is speech. And if you try to fix this legislatively, you run into the problem that the Supreme Court will strike down any laws that are passed to actually say, you know, corporations should not be considered persons and money should not be considered speech. You also can't rely on the Supreme Court to fix this in the future because they might not, but even if they do, it could be overturned by a future court. So really what we need to do is amend the Constitution to make it clear that that corporations are not people and money is not speech.
New York City Councilman Oliver Coppell says a $1 million study by the city's Economic Development Corporation on a living wage proposal was done by people biased against the very concept of a living wage.
Instead of going to a group of experts who are neutral and who would do a study without bias, we believe that this study starts off with the conclusion already determined.
Labor, clergy, and community groups are fighting to pass a $10 per hour minimum wage for jobs created on development projects that are done with the help of public subsidies in New York City. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoned. Come on, get started. Come on, get started. Get started.
I wish we had early voting. I wish we had a week of early voting. I wish you had the opportunity to go into the polls and cast your vote at your convenience instead of 13 hours on a Tuesday when, you know, you got to pick up the kids, you got to go to work, you got to make dinner, you got to do all those things. Wouldn't it be nice to have that? I think it would, so we could get started. We could make sure that more people had the opportunity to vote because I think this election, and I know they say it all the time, but this one is really important. This is a big one. I got George Hartwick on the line. He's Dauphin County's commissioner. George, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Rick. How are you?
I'm terrific. I'm looking to Tuesday, guardedly optimistic. I see some of the polls tightening up. I think maybe I'm hoping things won't be as bad as the mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media is predicting.
Well, I know I am fired up and ready to go. I know there's a 1.2 million voter registration margin for Democrats, and it's all about turnout. So let's get our butts fired up. Let's not listen to polls, and let's make sure we show up, and let's make sure the state is in much better shape as a result of our efforts on Tuesday, based upon what we hear from these Republican-funded polls.
Let me ask you this. As a county commissioner, I'm looking at Tom Corbett, Mr. I'm not going to raise taxes or fees, never, ever. So he's not going to raise state taxes. What does that mean for you?
That there is going to be a push downhill that with only one vehicle for counties to be able to provide funding for the direct services that we are responsible for from Health and Human Services to other federally and state mandated services where the rubber meets the road in the county, if the state neglects their responsibility, I'm certainly sure Mr. Corbett won't step up and tell us who we're not supposed to serve. And with not adequate resources, we're going to be forced to turn to property tax owners as the only way to raise additional revenue for the inability to show any political leadership or address the funding shortfalls that the Commonwealth faces. And quite frankly, they're historic, and the multi-million-dollar shortfalls are only going to be on the backs of local property taxpayers without any leadership or additional revenue generation on behalf of state government.
Yeah, I've been saying for the past couple of weeks that the cuts that are coming without any additional revenue sources are going to be deep, wide, and painful, especially with the fact that October 1st has come and gone. We do not have a sane, rational, reasonable extraction tax on the Marcellus Shale that we were promised by Senate Republicans. They've left town. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. And now we're going to be stuck again holding the bag, we the taxpayers.
Well, it's not going to happen because, quite frankly, the corporate interests that are funding Mr. Corbett's campaign has convinced Senate Republicans to hold off and wait, and we'll allow corporations and big business to extract our natural resources, affect our environment, and do it without having to train and hire Pennsylvanians or to be able to provide the funding that every other state requires. And it's big business, quite frankly, buying off the leadership in state government at the expense of taxpayers and our own natural resources. And unless we do something about it on November 2nd, which we are in a position now where about 5 days out from an election, these are the type of issues that we're facing. I can't tell you how critically important and the stark comparison between the candidates as it relates to leadership. Dan Honorato has been very clear that he wants a reasonable severance tax on the Marcellus Shale oil reserve. He wants to do it in a way to help fund the environmental cleanup through DEP. He also wants to figure out a way to fix local infrastructure and provide some additional money to the local municipalities in which this significant drilling is happening. The infrastructure is being torn down, and a lot of these rural areas don't have the capacity to continue to handle these big rigs and all of the environmental issues that are going on. Beyond that, he's saying that through DEP, we want to be able to provide permits and to make sure that we're being responsive, not in 2 years, but in a reasonable amount of time. But as a result, if you want permits, you will hire Pennsylvania workers at a wage that's going to be family sustaining. None of those are the plans of Tom Corbett. Quite frankly, he wants to give huge breaks, no severance tax, no commitment to hire Pennsylvanians. And when you've got a philosophy to outsource jobs, we're going to see trucks from every other state that is providing these oil rigs. And here in Pennsylvania, we're facing significant economic challenges. You're talking about budget shortfalls. A way to be able to shore up those shortfalls is to be able to provide good family-sustaining jobs, provide trained workforce, and in an emerging economy with such natural resources, we need a leader who's going to say to these big companies, number one, you're going to take care of our environment. Number two, and most importantly, you're going to hire Pennsylvanians.
Well, it makes perfect sense to me, George, but, you know, some of my conservative friends, they don't understand why hiring transient workers is bad for Pennsylvania. They just don't get it.
Well, that's quite frankly because they live in a fantasy world that believe people are sitting at home who are unemployment. They don't have any motivation. They don't want to get back to work. Hey, Rick, I came from a household with two generations of steel workers. I know the value of hard work. People who struggle and come from difficult economic circumstances, give them the opportunity to be able to provide a family-sustaining wage, and I will put our workforce up against anywhere. It's those individuals who do think and don't understand what it's like to have to work hard, who were born with a silver spoon in their mouth, who quite frankly don't live in communities that are struggling. They don't have to worry about health care. They accept government-run health care. As a matter of fact, they're hypocrites. They accept government-run health care. It's good enough for family, but somehow it's not good enough for the individuals who are working 3 to 4 jobs to be able to make ends meet. Clearly, when you don't live in reality, when you're not connected to the challenges that exist in real Pennsylvania, when you've never created a job, and when you don't have to be responsive to the people who are struggling, quite frankly, you don't think it exists. And that's the difference between the two candidates. Quite frankly, Dan Honorato knows that Pennsylvanians are struggling. He knows there needs to be a commitment to turn the economy around. And that commitment can come in the form of jobs in Marcellus Shale, as well as redevelopment of old urban brownfields. None of that development, no job has ever been created by Tom Corbett. And quite frankly, the policies that he's talking about are only going to take Pennsylvania backwards. We're going to make George Bush was some sort of hero if we continue to move down the tracks that we're going. We need to get out on November 2nd. It's extremely important. I can't tell you how important it is. It's no coulda, woulda, shoulda. This is a historic and extremely important vote, and the difference between the candidates couldn't be clearer.
I agree. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with George Hartwick, Dauphin County Commissioner. So you think Honorado's the guy?
Look, I have very rarely come across in public service. There's a lot of people who want to run for office. You know, they want to try to get into a position of authority, but they have no competent skills by which to govern. Dan Honorado is both a CPA and an attorney. He served both in local government in the city of Pittsburgh as a council member, then as the controller of Allegheny County, and now as the county executive, has held the line on property taxes. And despite what you see on the negative TV commercials, he has figured out a way not only to create jobs, to see Allegheny County as one of the bright spots in the national economy, but he's also done that without increasing real estate taxes, and this will be his seventh straight year of doing so. He's not only talked about issues where there's been revenue shortfalls, where Allegheny County was getting ready to lose their airport, when steel mills and the old industrial communities were really facing significant challenges. Right now there's two brand new steel mills being built in western Pennsylvania. Westinghouse is increasing significant jobs. There's two new solar companies that are moving in and producing solar panels for national distribution. I mean, they're seeing a resurgence in the investment in both industrial and manufacturing jobs, unlike that's being seen around the rest of the state. Quite frankly, that leadership and the investment in that area, and also understanding the family-sustaining wages and jobs that can be created as a result. And when government money is used, Dan has been very clear that labor and family-sustaining wages are a priority. When you're talking about representing big business, you're going to come in and figure out a way you can ignore all those laws, figure out a way not to pay folks a competent family-sustaining wage, and quite frankly, you're going to make more for the owners, businesses, and CEOs. And if that's what you care about, making sure it profits as a result of our tax dollars, that's the difference. Who's going to get paid? Is it going to be individuals in this state that are hardworking, that are trying to raise families, or is it going to be the very few that can run the companies to make sure that the difference between the haves and have-nots only get greater, and the individuals who are actually doing the work and trying to struggle to make ends meet and are actually the ones who are where the rubber meets the road, are they going to be able to make a family-sustaining wage versus paying a CEO a couple more billion dollars and on his private jet, being able to jet set around the world as on the backs of Pennsylvania workers. There really needs to be a balance, and I believe Dan Honorato has the experience, and he also has the commitment and the track record to show that he's been able to do it in the second largest county in the Commonwealth, and he's not done it on the backs of workers. He's done it to be able to help provide those opportunities to those workers out in Allegheny County.
And that's an excellent point you make, because, you know, I'm saying what's going to happen next year with the budget shortfalls is we're going to see deep, wide, and painful cuts for people who are not going to be able to stand up for themselves. They don't have high-priced lobbyists. They don't have advocacy groups supporting them. They're the people who, for all intent and purposes, are unable to defend themselves.
And the Department of Public Welfare isn't where people just stand in line for food stamps. The Department of Public Welfare, they're changing the name to the Department of Health and Human Services. It's also where folks who have mental illness, individuals who may be, kids who may be neglected or abused through no fault of their own, need to be protected rather than ending up in a child death. The Area Agency on Aging protects and provides services to our ever-growing senior population. It's not just about folks who don't want to work. And quite frankly, balancing those human services needs along with the needs of the entire state is something that only a county commissioner has the experience to be able to do, and to do it and provide a balanced budget on time each year without tax increases. And that doesn't mean necessarily bigger government. It means being able to run a more efficient government, understanding what the priorities are within government. And quite frankly, Dan Honorato reduced the size of Allegheny County's workforce by over 10% when he took over. I don't believe any of us think we need more government. We need more efficient government that's focused on what we're required to do. And quite frankly, Dan Honorato knows what that is. Tom Corbett is just trying to seek office. He'll find it out if, in fact, we don't show up to the polls on November 2nd, all at our own expense.
So your prediction before we wrap this up?
My prediction is if we don't show up at the polls, we lose. We lose to big business. We lose to a candidate who has put bonus gate on the front of our newspapers as a way for him to gain some name recognition and the ability to step forward only to prosecute Democrats so far in a partisan way. And again, if we don't show up on November 2nd, we will be at a loss. If you show up, the numbers show that it's people that control the outcome of the election, not polls. And again, with a huge voter registration difference in Pennsylvania, if Democrats show up, Democrats will win. And thanks to your show, I think we're doing a lot to motivate Democrats and indicate how important it is that they show up for Dan Honorato on November 2nd.
All righty. George Hartwick, Dauphin County Commissioner, I appreciate your time. I hear you getting a little, I'm sure you're doing a lot of these shows. Rest your voice a little bit.
I will certainly do that. I'm going to also snuggle in with my kids. We just took them trick-or-treating tonight, and I did take an evening off, although I did do a union rally earlier in this show, and we should all work tirelessly until we get across the finish line. The stakes are way too high.
I agree. Thanks so much, George. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Scott Right Wing, just race. The Rick Smith Show.
Hey, Bucko, stop whining about this sour economy and start thinking about the plight of others. For example, arms dealers. You've probably paid no attention to the hard fact that the global recession caused worldwide arms sales to plummet by 8.5% last year, pinching the profits of U.S. weapons pushers. The only saving grace in this downbeat news is that America's glorious arms industry did retain its position as the number one supplier of weapons to the world. We still control nearly 40% of the global market, with Russia a distant second. But before you set off a mess of fireworks in celebration, note that the U.S. sales in 2009 were down by more than $15 billion from the previous year. On the upside, the developing world is still in a buying mood. Last year, such emerging nations as Brazil, Venezuela, Iraq, India, and Vietnam poured billions into purchases of military playthings that go boom. Again, U.S. dealers were the big winners, controlling a third of the arms trade in this robust market. The greatest news for American purveyors of killing machines, however, is Iran. This rising Mideast power has spooked the U.S. and Israel. So, in the vague hope of countering Iran's growing punch, the White House and Congress are about to okay a blockbuster sale to the monarchical rulers of Saudi Arabia. Some $90 billion worth of top-line fighter jets, helicopters, naval armaments, and other sophisticated war machinery would go to the Saudis. The largest single sale of U.S. arms ever. The theory is that somehow or other, maybe, possibly, sometime in the future, this escalation of military testosterone in the explosive Mideast might produce harmony.
This is Jim Hightower saying, good luck with that. But hey, if it jacks up profits for our arms dealers, what's not to like about it?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book title, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. Believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yeah, we need bigger prisons. Close down those schools. Those hippies want to feed people. How dare they? How dare they? Take my money. Feed those lazy people, right? Isn't that what we're told?
Amazing stuff. The Borowitz Report. I love Andy Borowitz, his writing. He writes, in an extraordinary edition of The Daily Show, guaranteed to dominate the headlines for days, the most powerful man in America met last night with Barack Obama. While the most powerful man's decision to set aside 30 minutes for a sitting president carried with it risks for both men, each could lay claim to some measure of victory the morning after, says Professor David Logsdon of the University of Minnesota. Just to be seen on the same stage as the country's most powerful man is a win for Barack Obama, said Professor Logsdon. It definitely lifts him up a notch. Conversely, the most powerful man in America had something to gain by giving the president so much of his time. By reaching out to the president, he's perceived as caring for those less fortunate. But the nation's most powerful man, it took guts for him to go toe-to-toe with a polished comedian like Obama, who has gotten big laughs in such venues as the White House Correspondents' Dinner. What you don't want to wind up doing is being Obama's straight man for a half an hour, Professor Logsdon said. Fortunately, that didn't happen. While the consensus seems to be that the most powerful man in America handled his half an hour with Mr. Obama with his usual A-bomb, critics are already saying that he shouldn't have wasted his time with such trivial distractions. He has an important rally coming up this Saturday, Mr. Logsdon said, with the future of the country resting solely on his shoulders. Does he really want to be seen laughing it up for a half an hour with a politician? And, you know, you look at this rally that's going on Saturday, and everybody I've talked to who's in the media is flipping mad because they're not giving out any media credentials. They're not engaging the media whatsoever. And look, I think the reality is this is a comedy show, folks. This is not a political rally. This is comedy. This is them poking fun. And I know some of my friends in the media are upset because of it, but personally, why would you want to go? Anyway, CNN has reported that the U.S. Geological Survey says it has estimated the amount of conventional undiscovered oil in the Natural Petroleum Reserve for Alaska is a fraction of what was previously estimated. They're saying that 896 million barrels of oil are in reserve, and that's about 90% less than what we thought was there. So somebody's been lying. And speaking of lying in Alaska, interestingly enough, our friend Joe Miller. It turns out that Joe Miller was suspended for 3 days and referred to an employee assistance program after admitting, coming back and saying, well, you know, I did it. He used 3 government computers, then cleaned the caches to cover up his activities. That's according to his personnel records. the AP, Alaska Dispatch, the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, and the Anchorage Daily News all filed an Information Act, an open records request. They were given Miller's employment record. And what I thought was interesting is that Miller said in a statement on Tuesday that, quote, "I appear to be the only candidate in this Senate race whose entire life history matters to the media." Joe, let me help you with something here. This is what happens when people step into the fishbowl, which is why I won't do it. But you got to remember, this is the same guy who kind of brought this on himself by saying, "Well, I'm not answering any more personal questions." Welcome to politics, Joe. Dirt sells. You've got skeletons in your closet. They're going to find it. And when you say, "I'm not going to do it, I'm not getting into it," they're going to look even deeper. And, you know, this thing to me is trivial. So he used a government computer. He did something stupid. He admitted it. He took the punishment. To me, it's a non-issue. But it was the fact that he... Have we learned nothing in politics over the years? Have we learned nothing? If you did something, admit it. Just tell the truth. I tell my kids this all the time. And for any politicians listening, it's pretty simple. Tell the truth. Because covering it up always makes it worse. I tell my kids the same thing. If you did something, tell me about it. Don't cover it up, because I'm going to be ticked about you covering it up. And I'm going to be ticked about you lying. And it's the same thing with these politicians doing dumb stuff. Look, folks, simple stuff here. Tell the truth. Not that hard. And for Miller's trouble, it appears is that he's fallen into third place. Lisa Murkowski, the senator from Alaska, she's actually leading with 34% of the vote in the latest Hayes Research Group poll, and she's the write-in candidate. The Democrat, Scott McAdams, who we've heard nothing about, he's getting 29% of the vote, while Miller's only projected to get 23, which is pretty interesting. Now, there could be, and come with me on this, if you will, we could have a Democrat for 6 years in Alaska. Because Murkowski is not the easiest name in the world to spell correctly. And from what I'm told, it has to be correctly written. So if it's not, they throw it out. So, you know, this ought to be interesting. And as we move down to the wire and Miller keeps up with the shenanigans, this could be really, really interesting. And it could be a pickup for Democrats, which, think about that for a second. Nobody thought the Democrats had a shot in Delaware. Nobody. They're going to walk away with a House seat and a Senate seat that they were never, never in a million years supposed to get. Delaware was on nobody's radar. They had written it off as solidly red. Solid. Then you got Christine O'Donnell, who pops up. And the guy who's, I always say his name wrong, but he's the guy who believes that the only person who's ever said separation of church and state was Hitler. So the next time your liberal friends say there's a separation of church and state, ask them why they're Nazis. That's the guy. He's going to lose as well. So you're going to get a Democrat in Castle's House seat, and you're going to get a Democrat in the seat that would have been Castle's in the Senate. So interesting stuff. But this Miller race, you know, as Tuesday comes close, and that's why I love politics. I love this game because of the jockeying that goes back and forth. And it always amazes me that people haven't made their mind up on who they're going to vote for. Well, you know, I got a couple of friends who are like that. Well, I'll figure it out when I get there. Like, you know, it's still a toss-up when you get to the screen. Where they get to the screen, they go, okay, there's two names. Let's flip a coin. Yeah, okay, I'll go with that guy. Always amazes me. Because you should know when you go into there who you're voting for. There are very clear differences, especially today, between the Republicans and the Democrats. And I go back to my government teacher, and I know I've been talking about him a lot lately. And I'll always remember that frame that he used. The Republicans are always going to be for the very wealthy, small government, big corporations, always going to be for that. And the Democrats are going to always be for the very poor and bigger government. The question is you folks in the middle, who do you want to pay for? Do you want to pay for the people who have too much to eat or not enough to eat? Because where do you think you're going to fall? Interesting, interesting way of framing things. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back with Ryan Sanders, candidate for the 19th Congressional District right here in Pennsylvania. Right back after this.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Get government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party, Pledge to America, says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone, forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up, and returning veterans. Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
The Chamber of Commerce attacks Joe Sestak for supporting good union jobs in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable.
The Chamber of Commerce gets millions of dollars from foreign corporations.
They oppose Social Security, Medicare, and overtime pay.
The Chamber of Commerce is against pension and retirement security.
And they support tax breaks for corporations that send our jobs overseas.
Joe Sestak supports our unions and our jobs because he is a true American patriot.
Thanks, Joe Sestak, for fighting for Pennsylvania jobs.
Hello, I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, you know, as I've been saying, I wish we could go to the polls right now. You know, it makes no sense to me on any level why we cannot have a longer period of voting, a couple of days, over a weekend especially, so that more people could participate, other than the fact that, you know, this is how we help keep this is how we suppress the vote. This is how we keep people disenfranchised. Because the people who actually have to go to work and raise their families and all the things that have to happen during the course of a day, you know, getting to the polls may be a little difficult. I'm all in favor of easier voting, same-day registration, a lot of that stuff. I've got Ryan Sanders on the line. He's a candidate for the 19th Congressional District here in the listening area. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rick. Good to see you.
I appreciate you taking time for me. We're coming down to the wire. I'm curious, what are you hearing?
I'm hearing a lot of good things. I was just endorsed by a Republican who's on the school board in Dover. So it's always good to get some people on the other side that think your message is a good thing.
Well, it's about creating jobs. It's about supporting working families. Things I can't say about the guy who you're running against.
Right. exactly. Unfortunately, it's his message is always more of the same. You know, the past policies that failed us the past 10 years. So I'm not sure why we would even consider going back to that. Honestly, like you were saying just a minute ago, I'd love to go to the polls right now because if we could talk about these things and really hit it with every voter and say, guys, do you understand the same policies that failed us year in and year out for the past 10 years and what got us here in the first place, the message would just totally change.
Because the reality is, you know, I read Thomas Friedman's piece the other day, who is no flaming liberal. By any stretch of the imagination, who's saying, explain to me why we want tax cuts during the middle of one of the worst recessions ever, because it worked so well during the Bush years. Explain to me why we want to do, some of the things that we've been doing all along, because the Republicans have the same vision, the same failed vision that got us into this mess we want to go back to. Doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And, the scary part is that tax cuts are their answer for everything. If the economy is in good shape, it's tax cuts. If the economy is in bad shape, it's tax cuts. If the economy is doing just so-so, it's tax cuts. You know, look, one size doesn't fit all. It's unfortunately, sometimes tax cuts are good, sometimes they're bad, especially if they're focused on giving more to the wealthiest who don't tend to spend their money like the middle classes and the lower class.
You know, I saw something the other day that caught my attention, and I was going to ask you about it. It appears that that Todd has signed on with some others in Congress to the way I'm guessing it is they want to repeal the 14th Amendment. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I saw that. It boggles my mind. I don't know why you even consider that. This is what the United States is about. We're all a country of immigrants. So how can you possibly claim that the fact that my family, which came in the 1750s. Has better rights than someone else who was born here.
What amazes me is that these are the same folks, and Bill Schuster was one of them, Joe Pitts was one of them, Todd Platts, and I grouped the three of them together because they're of the same cloth, in my opinion.
But yeah.
They're the ones who are out there saying, we love the Constitution, and the Constitution is what it is. We got to follow that, but except what we don't like, and we'll change that.
Right, exactly. And the irony of this whole stuff is the hypocrisy of all the Republican agenda. You know, it's okay to fight activist judges, except when you want them to be doing something you want them to be doing. It blows my mind, and the hypocrisy doesn't stop. It's across the board, whether it's tax cuts, whether it is religion, whether it is morality. It never. This is why I anytime I hear somebody saying, I will never. I take that with a grain of salt because I just don't think they're going to do what they're going to do. Because you can't say in a country like ours, which is free and everything can change in the moment, that you're never going to change your mind and you're never going to do something else. Let's do what works. Let's stop playing moral games with each other.
Right. I don't envy you, to be honest, because you're in a very tough district. As I've seen it, it's about a 60-40 district, Republicans to Democrats. And how are you doing reaching out to the moderate Republicans? Because they've got to be looking at their party right now and going, man, this party has gotten really extreme really fast.
Yeah, some actually are. I was at, this was about 2 weeks ago, I was at the Hanover Chamber of Commerce, and I was Todd was there and Josh Monaghan were both there. We all gave our speeches, and afterwards, a gentleman came up to me who was a business owner, and he says to me, "Why aren't you a Republican?" And I laughed for a moment. And I said, I'm the kind of guy who wants to focus on results. And, Republicans, for whatever reason, stole that marketing message and did a very good job of marketing it. It's not about party right now. It's about who gets results. And that's what my message is. I definitely have a leftward view on things. I believe people should have the opportunity to start. But what they do with that opportunity is up to them. And that message, I think, rings true throughout the country. That's an American idea. We give everybody, here's your opportunity. You're free. You have choices. You have education. You have opportunity for whatever you want to do. Go from there. That's how this message comes across in an area that is perceived to be conservative. Because we're really not conservative. We're independent people who think about practicality, about frugality, about a strong work ethic.
And we believe in taking care of ourselves and personal responsibility, which
right.
I got to be honest, one of the things that drives me nuts is I see these people who call themselves conservative coming out against the health care bill because it mandates that people buy health care, which I got to be honest, to me, seems like a conservative frame. You're being responsible for yourself. You're we're making sure that you buy what you need to make sure that I don't have to pay for you. To me, that seems like a conservative position.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, they just don't. I wish I had an explanation for it because I talked to Gary Sutton's show in WSBA for a while, and I was like, they have the same concept. They keep saying to me that that they don't that mandates from car insurance are not the same thing, for example, because everybody has to buy car insurance. Well, they said, well, not everybody has to own a car. Well, what's the difference? If you are on getting a car, you have to have car insurance. It's a mandate because if you're going out there, you're causing an accident and you don't have coverage, everybody else has to pay for it.
But here's the thing, and this is where it's kind of in the ballpark kind of an argument. But if I don't own a car, that's one thing. If I don't have health insurance and I have a heart attack, I'm going to die.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's the worst part is that, you know, no matter what, that's why I don't understand their argument. They said, well, you don't need to get a car. Well, yeah, take this to the extreme. No matter what happens here, you're going to get sick. Everybody's going to get sick. And everybody at some point is going to die. So this is a cost that everyone, the entire country, bears for you, no matter what. So if you're not covered, if you're not paying into the system fairly, yeah, this is what you're right. It makes no sense. There's no rational concept behind this. Now, I understand maybe they don't want a mandate involved. So if that's okay, then let's come up with an option that gives us that choice where everybody's paying fairly. I haven't seen that plan.
Yeah, and
I don't.
See, because we're not, and I think we can all agree, we're not as a society going to say, okay, you didn't buy health insurance. Sorry, you're just going to lay here on the street and die. We're not going to do that as a society. At least I don't think we're going to.
No, we should. We can. In fact, that's one of the reasons why our health care costs are so out of control, because there's a law that was passed in 1986 that states exactly that. Anybody who shows up at a hospital will be covered regardless of their ability to pay. And that's why hospitals are struggling to pay their bills. And my mother works at York Hospital, and they lost $5 million last year. And the administration told her, she works in the case management, which deals with insurance industry, trying to get reimbursed. They said, if you need to make sure you get every penny possible back, because we're hurting. And they're hurting because they have to pay for everybody who can't afford the coverage.
Right. But, you know, here's the other part of this is they're not losing the money, really, honestly and truthfully. You and I are, because we're the ones who end up paying the bill.
Right.
One way or another, we're paying for national health care. We're just not getting it.
Right. We're just never getting results. That's, you know, this is why France or Germany or Mexico or other countries have half the cost of our health care, because they do have more people paying into the system.
Let's talk about getting people out to vote. What are you guys doing over there at the Ryan Sanders campaign to make sure everybody gets out to vote this November 2nd? Because I got to tell you, the media has done a fantastic job of demoralizing Democrats into saying, well, you know, this just isn't your year. What are you guys doing to fire up your base to get people to the polls? Because I think that, again, you know, it's not rocket science here, but, you know, the people who can get their base out, they're going to win.
Yeah, number one is talking to you. The more people we talk to through the media ourselves is good.
You can say it. You can say it. That was a dumb question.
But no, most important thing we got to do is I'm knocking on doors. You know, knocking on doors and calling people, because it's that personal contact that makes a difference. It really, you know, everybody needs to feel like their vote matters, and it does. And whether it's me, well, knock on somebody's door, or whether it's a volunteer knocking on somebody's door, that proves the point that this really helps us. This makes the difference, and your vote matters. Because especially in smaller local districts, it really makes a difference. You know, one vote can turn an election. And even in a district the size of ours, the 19th, a couple votes can make the difference. You know, this election can be won on 100 votes, 1,000 votes. And that's not that many people it takes to just get out of your house and go do it. It's not only a duty. As your constitution, as an American, it's just in your own self-interest. If you don't vote, you don't get the coverage or the representation that you deserve.
And you don't get to complain.
Right, and you don't get to complain.
You don't get to complain. In fact, I think we should issue cards to people who vote so they can walk around and go, see, I voted, I can complain.
I think you're right. I think it'd be great.
No answer there. last minute, why you? Why should I vote for Ryan Sanders?
One word answer, leadership. As much as I've always liked Tom Tyson as a person, he's a good man, and he does do what he thinks is best. What he misses us on is leadership. It's the matter of, healthcare, for example. He said for years, he's like, I always wanted to vote for a healthcare bill, but never came up with one that I could vote for. Well, end of the day, aren't you a legislator too? And isn't it your job, if you don't like the bill, to make one that you like? It's issues like this that make the difference for us, long-term and short-term. Somebody who gets down into New York City and says, what's the problem here? Why is New York City struggling? Why are the school districts struggling? It's not a matter of short-term results. It's a matter of putting your reputation and putting your leadership down to say, we need to make some changes because these places need to be brought up to the standards that we expect for an American city.
All right. I hope to talk to you Tuesday night. When we announce your victory, I'm hoping to get a hold of you then.
Me too. I will be there. You got my number, so call me up.
Ryan, great talking to you. Best of luck, buddy. Keep up the fight. Coming down to the wire.
Great. Thanks a lot. Have a good evening.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of the 7 Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You'd say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
I got 800 miles of open board right outside my door. There's many men in little pickup trucks who declared their own dang war. Now the government wants to build a barrier like old Berlin, 8 feet tall. But if Uncle Sam sends me build the wall.
That's a good question. And if Meg Whitman sends her housekeeper back to Mexico, who's going to clean her house? Who's going to cook her food? Who's going to wash her dishes? I don't know if you've seen this, but Meg Whitman, the Republican gubernatorial candidate from California, was asked if her former housekeeper should be deported. And she answered, well, the answer breaks my heart, but she should be deported because she forged documents and she lied about her immigration status. And it just breaks my heart. Gloria Allred, off a political stunt, and you know what? On November 3rd, no one's going to remember or care about Nikki Diaz. But the law is the law, and we live in the rule of law. It's important. Not to mention that this woman cost me $200 million. Not to mention she took $200 million. And she'll have nothing left to show for it but some bad commercials and some wire yard signs. So I think that's pretty funny. Good for you, Meg. Good for you. And here in the area, we got Todd Platts, who, as we talked about the other night, wants to do away with the 14th Amendment. Signed on with some other crazy people who want to do away with it. And I guess maybe that plays to a certain segment, you know, to the angry teabag type. You know, plays to a certain segment, I guess. But these are the people who are supposed to be Constitution-loving folk. Kind of makes you wonder, maybe just a little bit. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Helen on line one. How are we doing tonight, Helen?
Hi. You were saying about what are you doing to get the vote out. Well, I can't do a heck of a lot, but tonight was where they have Halloween here in our area. I don't know if everybody else has had theirs, but if you hadn't, a suggestion. Sit out there on your porch, put some signs in the window for your candidate. I have bumper stickers on my car so the parents can't help but, you know, see them when they walk up to get, I give out, you know, things for school, not candy, but whatever you give out. And, you know, it's kind of a subtle way to get the, you know, your point across.
That's why I've got yard signs in my front yard.
Yeah, yeah. And, but, you know, you do something nice to their kids and they see you got a SES tax sign and maybe, just maybe, they might think, gee, you know, nice person, nice guy, that maybe I'll vote for him.
I've actually had people tell me that, because I'm one of the very few. I'm the one where they know where I live. That's where the Democrat lives.
yeah.
And I've actually had someone tell me, well, you don't seem that bad.
yeah.
For
yeah.
one of those people.
Yeah. Well, I have the, you know, the library always has the book sale before Halloween, so I also have a pile of books out there, some which I got from the library for free and some I paid like 50 cents for. And, you know, I mean, it's like a Democrat happens to be and sort of an educated person, too.
Yeah, but, you know, the kids still, they still want to be all sugared up. I took my kids out trick-or-treating tonight, and, you know, they just... my daughter, 8 years old, she wanted to be a bride. and my wife made her this beautiful wedding gown with the whole veil and the bouquet thing. And I'm going, not for another 30 years. What are you doing?
30 years?
At
you
least.
Hope.
At least you 30 hope. Years. I want to be dead. Well, maybe not dead, but on my last leg before that.
Good luck.
Thank you so much, Helen.
Yes,
I appreciate
bye-bye.
The call. Yeah, but, you know, tonight was trick-or-treat in our area, and... I gotta tell you, I think I'm gonna push this. I'm generally pretty libertarian when it comes to rules and laws and all that. But I was driving to the station here tonight, to the studio here tonight, and somebody taking their kid trick or treating in a completely, because my area, I guess they don't believe in street lights, decided in all black, with a kid with a ninja costume on, they're going to cross the middle of the road. And I couldn't see them for love nor money. In fact, didn't see them until I passed them and heard them screaming. And I'm like, I thought I hit somebody. And I'm no flashlight, no reflective tape, nothing. And I'm driving in here going, you know, it's amazing that we as a species have lived as long as we are, in some cases being as dumb as we are. To be standing out in the middle of the street in all black at night where you can't be seen and then be surprised when a car comes by and doesn't see you. amazing stuff. I mean, we got rules for some of the dumbest stuff on the planet. When my kids went out to trick-or-treat, they had the little orange pumpkin with a flashlight inside of it. So as they're carrying their little orange pumpkin to put candy in, you see the orange pumpkin. It lights up. It's glowing so that the cars know that there's someone there. I got to tell you, I was, wow. Wow, wow, wow. And I got to be honest, I'm still kind of freaked out by it. It's just one of those things. Frustrating stuff. I don't know if you saw the Karl Rove interview. Karl Rove was interviewed by the UK, the Telegraph in the UK. And he said something interesting about K. Sarah Sarah Palin. He said, quote, "Well, all due candor, appearing on your own reality show on the Discovery Channel, I'm not sure how that fits in the American calculus of that helps me see you in the Oval Office." He also added that the promotional clip for Sarah Palin's Alaska could be especially detrimental to any political campaign. It's Mama Grizzly in the great outdoors saying, "I would rather be doing this than sitting in some stuffy old political office." And if you remember, she did quit her job as governor to do that kind of stuff. I mean, she's been hawking this TV or radio gig from day one. Does the word gold digger mean anything? She saw an opportunity. You got to give her credit. She saw the opportunity, and she took advantage of it. Took advantage of it. And, you know, I don't know that I necessarily blame her. I wouldn't have done it. I would have finished my term and then gone. But, you know, maybe in the 2.5 years she had left to complete her term, maybe in that 2.5 years, her commodity would have gone down. Her stock would have gone down. I mean, I think as governor, she could have had someone write those crummy books that she's been selling. I do. I mean, because you don't actually think Sarah Palin sat down and wrote those. I don't even think she read them, let alone wrote them. You have ghostwriters who do that stuff. I'm sure as governor, she could have done that, right? And maybe she could have even made her political stock better by saying, you know what, I'm going to donate all my salary back because I'm living off of these crummy books. Seems logical to me, but that never seems to happen on the Republican side of the aisle. At least I haven't seen it. Kind of makes you wonder, though. I know it makes me wonder. Anyway, I'm telling you, Tuesday's important. Tuesday is so important. You got to get out and vote. And you know all the nonsense that's going on. You know, the aqua Buddha guy. You know, with the head snopper. You've got to. I don't know how to impress this upon people. You absolutely need to get out there and stand up for yourself. Stand up for our democracy. Don't let the bullies take us down. And you know, I talked to somebody today who said, you know, who knows what's going to happen? I don't want to get involved. I'm going, hey, this is your country we're talking about. This is the future of your children we're talking about. I mean, because to be honest, I used to go, I don't care what they do. Let them stay home. But now I'm starting to see by allowing them to go down, I go with them. And I don't want that. I don't want that at all. We're going to take a quick break right here. We're right back with Democratic gubernatorial candidate Dan Honorato. Right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
If we weren't in the game would already be lost. But we're in the game. With all the work that's been put in, all the money that's been spent, and we think well spent, we think we're making some real headway.
AFSCME President Gerald McEntee on Labor's powerful efforts to support working family-friendly candidates November 2nd. But McEntee says there's still a danger that the House will go Republican.
If Boehner becomes head of the House, we will see, in our judgment, no support for working men and women, not just labor, but working men and women in general. He's a friend of Wall Street.
McEntee says President Obama often describes how he found the economy like a battered car in a ditch when he took office, driven there by Republicans. McEntee says labor's political effort is to help Obama and Democrats avoid letting Republicans crash the economy again.
Obama's been trying to get that car out of the ditch, and we're trying to support him in that effort. We're middle-income workers, and it's union and non-union middle-income workers that are trying to give that support to governors, to House members, to Senate Democratic members as well, to turn this country around and get that car back in drive instead of reverse.
With massive amounts of corporate money anonymously flooding into campaigns nationwide as a result of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, one group has launched an effort to fix that by amending the U.S. Constitution. Kaya Ravenna is with the South Central Wisconsin chapter of the national group Move to Amend.
We think that it's important to actually amend the Constitution to undo Citizens United, because the Citizens United decision was based on two ideas, that corporations are people and money is speech. And if you try to fix this legislatively, you run into the problem that the Supreme Court will strike down any laws that are passed to actually say, you know, corporations should not be considered persons and money should not be considered speech. You also can't rely on the Supreme Court to fix this in the future, because they might not, but even if they do, it could be overturned by a future court. So really what we need to do is amend the Constitution to make it clear that that corporations are not people and money is not speech.
New York City Councilman Oliver Coppell says a $1 million study by the city's Economic Development Corporation on a living wage proposal was done by people biased against the very concept of a living wage.
Instead of going to a group of experts who are neutral and who would do a study without bias, we believe that this study starts off with the conclusion already determined.
Labor, clergy, and community groups are fighting to pass a $10 per hour minimum wage for jobs created on development projects that are done with the help of public subsidies in New York City. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Our quote of the day comes from former Pennsylvania governor and Bush-era Homeland Security czar Tom Ridge, who's giving Tom Corbett, the Republican gubernatorial candidate, an angle on how he can break his anti-tax pledge while claiming he kept his word. In the morning call yesterday, Ridge said, quote, "I've got to say that if the dollars were going to a specific cause, enforcement, regulation, support for local communities, counties, I personally don't think the public would view that as going back on his pledge," Ridge said. "It wouldn't affect them. It would socialize the benefits of these companies' presence." Did he use the word socialize? Really? I got weird stuff. I got Dan Honorato on the phone. He's the Democratic gubernatorial candidate. Dan, socialize?
Yeah, I don't know where he got that word, but if you listen to his definition, it sounds like he's supporting my view. I mean, we've had three debates. Everybody knows my position, a competitive severance tax on gas, and I say I'll spend the money on enforcement with funding of the Department of Environmental Protection. I talk about local infrastructure, roads, water lines, and sewers. And I talk about preserving farmland and open space. That's exactly my platform. So I guess Governor Ridge supports it.
Well, did you get that endorsement?
He didn't go that far, but isn't that interesting? Here's the gentleman who's now lobbying on behalf of gas. This is one of his clients, and he's basically adopting my platform for governor. That's exactly what I've been saying for the last 10 months in this campaign.
amazing stuff. And the thing is I look at Tom Corbett's position on the Marcellus Shale, and what I see is I see another failed trickle-down scenario that if we give them everything that they want, they'll be so appreciative to us that they'll bless us with jobs.
Well, that's just, I mean, if you really step back a second and just put the facts on the table, Tom Corbett is against any severance tax, and he would make Pennsylvania the only state taking that position. 21 states have gas and oil. They all have a severance tax because there's a real environmental impact when you take natural resources out of the ground. He wants taxpayers to have to pay that. The reason the other states, every Republican governor and every Democratic governor has this, is because the industry pays for it. It mitigates the problem. He simply is so far over there because he's taken over $900,000 in campaign contributions, and he can't be reasonable on this, and he's wrong. And he's doing the bidding for the gas companies, and they're prepared to pay for it, but he's now bought into it, and he can't move.
Yeah, well, the other question I guess I have on this, then, is he's taken $900,000. Let me ask you the flat-out question. How much have you taken?
I've taken about $300,000, and they, you know, obviously they're covering their best in case I win, but I made it clear. And the reason they support my candidacy is because I think Governor Ridge has shown you why. I'm for the industry. I want it to grow. I want it to grow in an environmentally responsible way. I want a competitive severance tax, which these companies pay in every other state, and I want to use it, the money, to mitigate any of the problems. They support that. Also, I made it clear when I'm governor that the 80,000 jobs coming from this industry, I want them to hire Pennsylvanians. We'll train our people. I don't want Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana people here. I want those jobs. So I'm not hostile to their industry. I'm just making them follow rules so that this becomes a win-win for Pennsylvania.
You know, I got to be honest. If I were a business owner in this industry, I would want to know what the rules of the game are. I'd want to know what the regulations were. I'd want to have that all set out before me, before I invested one dime.
Yes. And as long as they hear from me that I'm not doing a statewide moratorium, I don't want that. I see the potential for this industry, and we want them to grow in this particular manner. And that's why that should answer the question. The fact that they are willing to give me some money, not nearly as much as Tom Corbett, but even with the position I just articulated, it's not hostile to them. It's different. It's different, and it's reasonable, and they know it.
Yeah. So you would you? I guess the question then would be: would you overturn Governor Rendell's executive order from I think it was Monday or Tuesday? From Tuesday?
No. That's a limited moratorium on state-owned land, forest land. I would even say we should definitely do that. And work on the private leases and work on the current state-owned leases to see what the impact is on the forest. I'm talking about 90% of the drilling is going to be on private land. I don't support a moratorium there. I would support putting a halt on any new drilling in the forest, and let's look at what we currently lease and see what that impact is. But as it relates to private land, I'm not for any moratorium.
Okay, good. I was wondering about the state lands thing.
Yeah.
I've been watching a little bit of TV. I'm not a big TV watcher, but I got to tell you, I am just absolutely disgusted by what I see on my television. Attack ad after attack ad after attack ad. The Republican committee, Corbett's campaign, all of these third party people throwing hundreds of millions of dollars into attack after attack. I've had enough already.
You know, it's interesting. As a candidate, I try not to watch TV the last 2 months. And right before our last debate, I was in a holding room before we went off TV, and they had a TV on. So I, for about 45 minutes, I must have seen 30 attack ads from all the different races. They all look alike, you know, grainy black and white pictures of the other candidate, you know, that they accuse you of destroying the free world. And you're right. I couldn't even tell the difference after three or four commercials. They all looked alike. They sounded alike. And I really find it interesting that my opponent was on for 6.5 weeks straight, all negative, all the time. We put up one commercial for 1 week, and he goes ballistic. Talk about having thin skin after he's attacked and went negative 100%. I put comparative ads. I've shown what two of us would do. I talk about what I would do for Marcellus Shale. I haven't heard one positive message of what he would do as governor on TV.
Well, that's the other part of this. I want to vote for somebody. I don't want to vote against somebody. I mean, to be honest with you, if you were watching the commercials about yourself, would you honestly vote for yourself based on what you're seeing on TV?
Well, I would have to admit that if you look at the two of us and what we put up in the overall commercials, I would have to say I was the one at least talking about issues. For example, you see my commercials where I talk about holding gas companies accountable.
Yes.
You see my commercial where I talked about the number of jobs we created in Allegheny County and how we did it, talking about holding line on taxes. I did a bio piece early on. I can't say that for my opponent. It's been 100% negative for the last month and a half. There's no positive commercial why he's running. I've had at least comparatives and positives talking about why I'm running.
You know, you bring up thin skin, and immediately Twitter Tom popped into my head.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
One little blurb from a Twitter, his initial reaction was to subpoena who's doing it. You know, you're running for governor or public official. You think I like half the stuff said about me and the attacks out there? But I know it's part of the game if you want to run for office. He's never been in the spotlight other than a prosecutor, but he's running for governor now. This is fair game. And, you know, you can't use the threat of your office to squelch political speech.
You know, I've been saying since that happened, if he did this, what will he do when he has more power?
Well, I saw how he reacted just for 1 week of TV. It's obviously he doesn't think anybody has the right to question his record. Well, my record's being questioned every day. His is fair game. The fact that he asked for more money every year as AG, fair game. The fact that he's asked for more cars, fair game. The fact that as a local official he raised property taxes 20%, that's all fair game.
I've seen you picked up really an awful lot of newspaper endorsements right here in Harrisburg, which shocked me. You picked up the Scranton Express Times, another big pickup, the York paper, I got to be honest, I'm shocked by the number of editorial boards who have sat down and looked at both of you and came out on your side.
It's about 16 to 5. I've received 16 editorials statewide. He's up to about 5 statewide.
I mean, it says volumes, I think, for your campaign, but also how bad his has been.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, one thing about editorial boards, the vast majority of them, they try to get through all the political BS on TV and radio and all that, and then look at the candidates and what we stand for. I am pretty excited and honored by the fact that these people didn't know either one of us, that we're winning those based just on our policies and what we've done what we plan on doing, and it means a lot to me right now.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Dan Honorato, Democratic gubernatorial candidate. Website, votehonorato.com. We'll put a link over at our site at therickssmithshow.com. One of the things that the next governor is going to have to do is going to have to deal with some of the public sector workers. My big fear is that if your opponent wins, we're going to see a massive brain drain. I think we're seeing brain drain already of qualified, good, the best of the best leaving because they're tired of being assaulted. They're tired of being beat up on. I guess my question for you is, what kind of governor would you be, and how are you going to keep the smartest people in our government?
You know, you talk about having a track record. Allegheny County, Pittsburgh in the 90s, had one of the fastest brain drains of any place in the country. We were losing more of our young people than any place else. Last year, National Magazine did a study of who retains young people the best. We were beating Boston and California now. And how did we do it? Because we reformed government in a responsible way, held the line on property tax, and created an environment for the private sector to bring jobs. The fact that the unemployment rate in my county is below the state number and below the federal number, we brought good-paying jobs back to Allegheny County in the Pittsburgh region. That's how you do it. As governor, I'm going to focus on what do we need to do to keep jobs and grow jobs in Pennsylvania. How do we responsibly create that environment for the private sector? And if we do that right and we bring jobs here, young people will stay if they get a decent pay to raise their family because we have all the other amenities in the state. That's how you do it.
No, I'm talking about the people who are in charge of our regulatory boards, the people who are in charge of our nuclear facilities, the state workers who really, a lot of the people that I've met doing this program, who take great pride in serving the state, they take great pride in serving the people of Pennsylvania, but the people on the right and some on the Democratic side have taken shots at them, and I think unfairly.
Yeah, they demonize public work. That's not fair. I'll give you a good example. They want to demonize the pension crisis on the workers. If you really look at why we have a problem, it's because the pension plans were abused. The employers, a lot of the government agencies, took money
from the pension formula and use it to balance the books as opposed to putting it into the pension fund for years. That's number one. In 2001, with the prior governor, prior Senate, the prior House, they gave away the stores on benefits, lowering the vesting period to 5 years, increasing the multiplier. That's why we got a problem. They abused the current system. What we need to do, and I'll give you another example, this Marcello Show severance tax. What's the first thing I said? Competitive severance tax, and what would I do with it? Replace all of the cuts that were made in the Department of Environmental Protection. We're going to be drilling in every county in Pennsylvania. Why not have a Department of Environmental Protection fully funded with good inspectors, quality workers to watch the environment, to make sure they're following the rules and regulations? But you got to fund it, and we'll use the severance tax to fund it.
Yep, absolutely right there. Another question. Would you privatize the state stores?
No, and I'll tell you why. My goal is to try to fix the legislature. It's the most expensive legislature in the United States based on how much we pay for it and how many people work for it. I want to downsize that and get at least a 20% savings. The reason the state store systems are not part of my reform is because we're looking at a $2 billion deficit. State stores bring in $500 million net to the operating budget every year. I'm going to work to make it more consumer-friendly within the system. There's many stores in my county where the state stores are in the food stores. It's great. It works. You know, let's open up Sunday hours. Make it more convenient. This makes money for us. It regulates alcohol. Privatizing will do two things. You get a lump sum payment up front, and then you lose the annual revenues.
Yep.
And two, all of the jobs go to minimum wage jobs. And that is not a good economic policy. We can make it more consumer-friendly within the system and keep making $500 million a year to help balance the budget.
Smart policy. Last question I've got for you, higher education. We're seeing the tuition rates just going through the roof. How do we make it affordable for my kids? I mean, I'm not a rich guy. How are my kids going to be able to go to college?
Well, and I would ask everybody to look at my policy papers at voteonarada.com, but I'm like you. I'm first generation to go to college. I graduated from Penn State in 1983, and I got out with very little debt because there were all kind of programs. Those programs don't exist anymore. We got to make sure that we have programs so that kids that are able and willing want to go to college come out with a lifetime of debt. One of my proposals, get FIA. Clean up FIA, make sure that we have a FIA grant that matches the tuition rate at the 14 state-owned and operated universities, but also make it flexible. Somebody wants to go to the four state related, they can move it. They want to go to a private, they can use it there. But there's at least a plan for them. If you want to go, there's a grant that will cover most of the tuition. Make it affordable if you want to go to the 14 state owned and operated. That's number one. Two, take advantage of some of our four state related and use science, technology, engineering, and math. Make each one of them, especially for our people, for our students and the residents of Pennsylvania, so it's affordable and get our best and brightest in those fields so we can compete again. If we do this right, we can actually encourage our best and brightest to go into the sciences and the technology and engineering and math and compete again globally and keep it affordable.
Last second, talk to the voters. Why Dan Honorato?
Well, the biggest difference is I have a track record of governing. That's why I got most of the editorials. I've already reformed the government. I downsized elected offices. My payroll's 10% smaller today than it was 7 years ago. I've held the line on property taxes for 9 years in a row, and we grew the economy with the private sector to a point where we have one of the lowest unemployment rates. I'm prepared to do that as governor and turn around the Commonwealth.
Outstanding. Best of luck to you on Tuesday. I hope everybody out to vote. Dan, I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Rick. Take care.
We're going to take a quick break right here. The website, voteonarado.com. We're right back after this. Stick around.
I'll never bend. I'm with you now until the end.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Get government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party Pledge to America says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up. And returning veterans? Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare, Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
You know, speaking of Wall Street, you know, there was a guy who was a derivatives trader, then he went on to be Wall Street's congressman, and now he's trying to be Wall Street's senator. You know, Pat Toomey has taken $1.6 million from the finance, insurance, and real estate industry, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. Toomey has accepted $1.631 million in campaign contributions from them. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of favors. That's a lot of ear time. Toomey has been described as by many people as the, you know, he's Wall Street's guy. When Toomey first arrived in Congress in 99, he was one of the guys who wrote the bill that took the controls off of Wall Street, that opened it up to casino gambling. Now the derivatives industry, according to Derivatives Strategy magazine, now the derivatives industry can claim a representative by one of its own in Congress. He fought every day against deregulating the financial services industry. Fought. Why? Because he was one of them. And look where it got us. And this is one of the things that I'm having a real difficult time dealing with. I'm having a real difficult time dealing with the fact that we want to go back to the strategies that got us into this mess in the first place. I'm having a real hard time figuring out why it's a good idea we should go back to what really got us into trouble. I'm talking more tax cuts. Did it do us any good during the Bush years? I mean, really, honestly, and truthfully, were things that great during the Bush years? We're talking about they want to do away with government oversight. Did that work well for us? Did corporations policing themselves, did that work well? Cutting spending, cutting programs during a recession, did that work well during the Depression? Did it? Because I'm missing it. And this idea that there's all this waste, fraud, and abuse out there that no one can identify, that nobody's found, that they can't name, we're just going to have to take their word for it. I'm sorry, I'm not buying it. I'm just not buying it. And we had better figure out, something and quick. And, you know, in the gubernatorial race, this no tax pledge, folks, this is dangerous stuff. You know, our senators, our Republican senators here in the state of Pennsylvania said, you know what? We're going to get this budget passed, and we're going to make sure that there's a Marcellus Shale tax by October 1st. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm still waiting. Here we are, October 28th. I'm still waiting. Still waiting. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Mike on line one. How are we doing today, Mike?
Yeah, all right. I just happened to hear one of your podcasts on you're talking about the Marcellus Shale out there, and I've got to wonder, are the people of Pennsylvania dumber than Jethro Clampett and Granny Clampett from the Hillbillies? Are they dumber than Sarah Palin and Rick Perry and even George W. Bush? I mean, Sarah Palin was governor of Alaska and saw to it that her constituents got money from the oil that was being drilled in Alaska, and it was given out to them. I mean, Rick Perry, the current governor of Texas, and George W. Bush, the previous governor of Texas, certainly had taxes on the oil being taken out of Texas. And that's had to go back, what, 100 years or so?
Yep, back when we had a brain. You know, I got to tell you, it's frustrating here. And the reality is the majority of Pennsylvanians, they want this tax. The problem is we've got a Republican-controlled Senate. The state Senate is controlled solidly by Republicans, and they are the ones who are saying no. They're the ones who are getting the campaign contributions. They're the ones who are standing in the way of this.
What your voters out there need to do is to euthanize the Republican Party of Pennsylvania.
That's what we've been trying to tell them. Because what I'm saying is, look, if the natural gas industry doesn't pay the state of Pennsylvania, the citizens are going to have to pay for the mess that's being made.
Oh, yeah, and not just that. I mean, they're not going to be getting anything for their
resource.
Right. I mean, it's like somebody walks into your house and walks in and takes anything they want to out of your refrigerator, and you say, hey, take it.
Oh, don't forget this. I mean, because that's kind of the whole Tom Corbett, the Republicans' platform. It's more trickle-down theory. If we give them everything that they could want, give them the land, give them the permits, give them everything, and whatever they want, and maybe they'll trickle down a couple of jobs on us.
That didn't work for, Tennessee with the Japanese auto plant?
Volkswagen.
And the thing was that there you gave them the land of that because they could go anyplace else to build their cars.
In fact, they're
not going to come to a cornfield in Iowa or a place in Illinois to drill for the gas that's under the land of Pennsylvania.
And you know what's amazing to me, Mike? The politicians here have been saying, well, if we put a tax on it, they won't come. Well, where are they going to go to get it? It's here. It's not like they got a big enough drill that'll go through from China through the core of the earth to get the gas out of Pennsylvania. They got to come here to get it.
That's it. I mean, it's unbelievable that they're doing that out there and that you don't have people out there just telling the Republican Party, hey, you guys are crazier than the Greens. You guys are crazier than the Nazis. You guys are crazier than all these third and fourth and seventh party candidates down there.
Yep.
You know.
And what's frustrating, I got to be honest with you, I'm not seeing the outrage. I'm just not seeing people upset. You know, PP&L, for instance, our electric company, because Pennsylvania has deregulated their electricity markets. So we get to have the wonders of the free market. So last December 31st, when they deregulated the market and I got the benefits of the free market, they raised my electricity rates 36%. Nobody peeped a word. And what I said, if the state would have said, we're going to raise your electricity taxes 36%, there would have been a revolution. But since the private for-profit PP&L said, you know what, we're going to raise your rates, everyone said, oh, okay.
There would have been a revolution had they wanted to raise the rates 3%.
There should have been.
Not the rates. I mean, if they wanted to raise the taxes, 3%.
Exactly.
There would have been a revolution. If they raised the rates 36%, it's business.
And it's just nuts.
Nonsense. I mean, it's like it sounds like that's the same kind of song and dance they ran with Enron in California when Gray Davis was governor and then ended up losing the governorship on a recall because of the way the rates went up. And then the guy that takes over from him is the guy that's in the meetings with Enron.
Gee, isn't that cozy?
Yeah, you know, Schwarzenegger's in the meetings with Enron, takes over from Gray Davis after Davis is kicked out because he isn't doing the job, supposedly.
You know, what I've been saying for the longest time is the big business, they've gotten together. All of the very wealthy people in this country, we found out there was supposed to be a meeting in January. I guess it's been canceled with the Koch brothers and all the billionaire class who get together and figure out how they can screw up our political system by holding back resources. And I got to tell you, at some point, I'm hoping the American voter wakes up to this.
I don't know if they will. I mean, you've got the situation with the Chamber of Commerce getting money from foreign sources and saying, well, we're not spending that in the election here. But the fact of the matter is, and let me steal this from the anti-abortionist, money is fungible.
Yep.
The anti-abortionist, even with the language that prevented any spending from the health care plan for abortion, they ended up with them saying, well, the money's fungible. If you give the money to them in one way, they'll simply use it to free up other money that will be used for abortion. And so if the Chamber of Commerce is getting money from the communist Chinese, because I don't seem to remember them ever renouncing their communism, that they're going to be ending up taking that money and maybe spending it for their lights and telephone, but that's going to simply free up the other money that they would have had to use for that to spend on the campaign contribution.
Yeah, we had the local Chamber of Commerce president on the program here, I guess last week sometime, and he really took offense to me calling the U.S. Chamber of Commerce the International Chamber of Commerce, because that's what they are.
Well, if they're taking the money from foreign sources and spending it in terms of affecting American elections, they are the International Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense. But he was quite offended. And he said, well, we only have 115 chapters around the world. We've got more than that in the state of Pennsylvania. I go, but you got 115 chapters around the world. That makes you an international agency. He wasn't happy with that.
Well, not just that. I presume those different chapters don't happen to be all equal.
No.
I mean, a single chapter, I would think of the country of China or India or Germany or France would be more of a concern than the chapter in some small town in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Or Dubai or Russia or any of the ones. Egypt, I think they got one. Look, you know, you look at this and you go, you wonder why our trade policies are so screwed up. You've got the Chamber of Commerce, who's supposed to be the lobbyist for big business, opening up these channels for American corporations to take jobs everywhere around the world. And what they're doing is they're greasing the tunnels to allow people to ship jobs out of here.
You wouldn't think that's something an American Chamber of Commerce would want to be doing.
Well, yeah. I mean, but again, these people, and I've said this before, these big institutions, they don't care about this country. They care about what they can suck out of it.
Well, there's a biologist back in the 60s named Garrett Hardin who had written a little piece for Science Magazine called The Tragedy of the Commons. And it kind of went on to create a discussion and a small book about the various discussions that had come around it came out. And one of the chapters in that book was the gain of killing the golden goose. That in some senses, it might make sense, especially in the short term, to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs because you make a greater profit for yourself then. But overall, to the community and to time, you lose.
Yeah, but
because you no longer have that goose.
Yeah, but we've got people who only look to the edge of their nose, to the tip of their nose. They're not long-term strategists. It's all about me and all about now. How much money can I stuff in my pocket right now and the heck with everybody else? Which is, you know, when you look at the fact that CEOs of companies that lay people off get bigger bonuses and bigger paychecks, and it's statistically proven. You kind of got to just scratch your head and go, what kind of a country have we become that we allow this to happen?
Yeah, they do that and run for high office in the state of California.
Or in the state of West Virginia.
Yeah.
It's nuts. And I got to be honest with you, there's part of me that says I want the Republicans to take over because they're going to actually have to do something. And the American people are going to see crazy front and center.
Are you old enough to remember the 1950s?
No, I'm 43.
Okay, you're 20 years too young then. Ever remember hearing the name Khrushchev?
Yep.
Remember the Soviet strategy at the United Nations in the 1950s?
I remember the quote.
Four letters, Nyet.
Yep.
That is what, in fact, if you look at what Bill Clinton entered office with, 1993, January of 1993, is almost identical to what Barack Obama entered office with in terms of a Congress in January 2009. Both had 57 Democratic senators. Obama had Lieberman, whichever side he decides to flip down on, and Sanders, who is a very liberal individual, in the Senate as well. But the thing was, and I think Clinton had two more Democrats in the House of Representatives than Obama. But the House wasn't the problem. The House passed bills, and then the communist Republicans in the Senate, taking after Nikita Khrushchev, pound their shoe on the table. And that's exactly what it's been. And that's why nothing's happened. And you can't really blame Obama on what hasn't happened because it's been held up by the Republican Party.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
You know, I'm upset about things Obama has done that he had control over, such as continuing certain
Afghanistan
case. Well, Afghanistan, he said he was going to continue, and I can understand his running the attacks from Afghanistan into Pakistan because they're using Pakistan as a staging area. But the big thing is that constitutional attorney putting a hit out on an American citizen that hasn't even been charged with anything? I mean, charge the guy with treason. The Constitution has a policy for treason. You put the guy in on trial in an open court, and you provide evidence.
Yep, that is our system.
You know? And then you take the guy out and hang him after you've convicted him. But you have to have the evidence there to convict him.
Excellent point. And I'm with you on that.
And instead, you've got Obama doing the other there, but and then continuation of the Patriot Act, which he could have vetoed had he wanted to. But, you know, the thing is that in terms of... we have a senator out here in the Midwest called Grassley.
Yeah.
He's running for re-election. Grassley is one of the long-term members of the family on C Street.
Yep.
And apparently back when he was congressman, ended up going over to Africa to deal with one of the dictators over there for the family on C Street. But out here, you don't see commercials about Grassley doing that. You see, Grassley works. And unlike what they might have done with that in California with Cheech and Chong coming out with a little thing like, wow, you know, they haven't even done that. They don't make fun of the guy, and the guy's going to walk away with a 30-point reelection.
Which is probably part of the reason why you don't see it, because, you know, nobody's going to put the resources into fighting him. Because he's, you know, I look here where we're at in central Pennsylvania. It's a 60-40 area. It never changes. Politic here is like sport. The Republicans go out, they pull the Republican lever every time without thought. And there have been some very good Democratic candidates to get rid of some of the incumbents who are really toxic. Bud Schuster, toxic. Joe Pitts, really one of the worst guys in the House. But you never see people go away from them.
Well, once you get somebody elected to the House, sometimes they just stay in office like forever. In the Iowa-Illinois area, for about 20, maybe 25 years, you had two congressmen serving. They had kind of done a reverse replacement. A Democrat had won in Illinois, the Republican won in Iowa, and they both served essentially from the Quad Cities south to about Keokuk on their areas right along the river. And so if you lived along the river, you ended up getting information about both of them. The one was Lane Evans, who retired, I think, one or two terms ago because of health concerns. The other one was Jim Leach, who was defeated, I think, two terms ago. And Leach was one of the people in the Ripon group of the Republican Party, so he was one of the liberals of the Republican Party. But he got a lot of Democratic support because he wasn't one of the right-wingers. But the senators that have been in the Republican Party from Iowa were right-wingers. Tom Harkin is a left-winger from Iowa also. And kind of likewise in Illinois, I think on the Senate, you've had either left-wingers or right-wingers essentially out of there. But, you know, you've got this situation that people are voting against their very own concerns.
Well, they're voting against their own economic interests.
Yeah.
I've had people explain to me that I've got a friend who he only votes on abortion, doesn't care about anything else. That's his only issue. That's the only reason he goes to the polls. It's the only reason he thinks. And that's what he votes on. Nothing else matters to him. Nothing else. And he knows he's voting against his own economic interests. He knew George Bush was toxic, and he knew George Bush was a horrible, horrible thing to happen to this country. But it was the abortion issue. And that's just how it is. And I don't know how to get through to people because abortion is never going away. They need it. It's that wedge issue to keep people stupid.
Well, it's the issue that came out of the Republican Supreme Court providing us with abortion because what was the vote? You had four Republicans named by Nixon. You had Brennan named by Eisenhower. You had Stewart named by Eisenhower for that six of the seven vote. No, must have been five of the seven because Marshall and Douglas also voted with him. But five of the seven votes in favor of abortion happened to come from Republicans on Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, but you never hear that.
And it was one Republican and one Democrat against it. Was Rehnquist and White. Three of Nixon's appointees voted in favor of it. It was written by Blatton, who was one of Nixon's appointees. Blackmun and Berger, early in their terms, have been called the Minnesota Twins because they voted so much together. So you had that, you know, complete situation there. And what it did is it broke what Nixon had managed to do was, with the abortion decision and with racism, he managed to break the South off from the Democratic Party, where it had been for a century, and he managed to break the Catholic Church away from the Democratic Party, because the Catholic Church, on most of the economic issues, is liberal.
Yep. I grew up in the Catholic Church, and to be honest, it was always about social justice. It was always about helping the poor, and it was peace and social justice. That's what religion was to me growing up. And now what I've seen the Catholic Church turn into is a very, very different, a very angry thing.
I mean, like, what was it in? There's a situation out in California where hospitals were dropping homeless people out of the hospital and on the
skid row. Yep.
Yeah. Taking them by taxi. And, you know, 40 years ago, you would have never seen a Catholic hospital do anything like that. I don't know if these would have been Catholic or not.
It was Kaiser Permanente.
But you haven't heard the Catholic Church come out and say, how in the hell can you do this? I mean, they're ignoring living people over the question, which at one time even the Catholic Church accepted abortion in the first trimester because they didn't believe that there was a soul attached to the body until what was called quickening. And, and it's the same thing with this stupid gay marriage issue. I mean, it's kind of like if government allows gay marriage, the next thing they think the Pope's going to be told by the government that he's going to have to allow gays to marry in his church.
Yep.
The government hasn't told him to allow the priest to marry, so why should it tell him to allow the gays to marry?
And,
well, or the nuns to marry?
As I've said, maybe if you did let gays marry, and if you did let priests marry, maybe you wouldn't have the Catholic Church with so many problems that it's got.
Oh yeah, with the priests.
But we don't want to get into that.
Well, that's true.
I got to take a break here, Jim.
Okay, well, take care and have a good day.
I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old wash, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike, Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The Chamber of Commerce attacks Joe Sestak for supporting good union jobs in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable.
The Chamber of Commerce gets millions of dollars from foreign corporations.
They oppose Social Security, Medicare, and overtime pay.
The Chamber of Commerce is against pension and retirement security.
And they support tax breaks for corporations that send our jobs overseas.
Joe Sestak supports our unions and our jobs because he is a true American patriot.
Thanks, Joe Sestak, for fighting for Pennsylvania jobs.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, yesterday in the Washington Post, they wrote, an intense military campaign aimed at crippling the Taliban has so far failed to inflict more than fleeting setbacks on the insurgency and putting meaningful pressure on its leaders to seek peace, according to the U.S. military and the intelligence officials, citing the latest assessment of the war in Afghanistan. Escalating airstrikes and special operation raids have disrupted Taliban movements and damaged local cells, but officials say that insurgents have been able to absorb the blows and that they appear confident that they are going to outlast American troop buildup set to subside next July. Look, these people have been at war for, I guess, since the beginning of time. And as I've been saying, there's no victory here. It's impossible. And nobody's even defined to me what victory there is, but I find it interesting that former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev warned NATO that victory in Afghanistan is impossible. Gorbachev said that the U.S. had no alternative but to withdraw its forces if it wanted to avoid another Vietnam. As the Soviet leader, he pulled his troops out of Afghanistan more than 20 years ago after a 10-year war. Actually, I thought it was a little longer than 10 years. I mean, stop and think about this for a minute. They were there 10 years, and I say that their misadventure into Afghanistan is really what brought them down. They were spending just boatloads of cash, just burning up boatloads of resources to try and fight this war, kind of like we're doing. They burnt up a lot of butter so that they could have guns. And you stop and think about how much health care money we're spending over there. You stop and think of how much social program money we're spending over there. And for what? We're making medium-sized rocks smaller because we've already made the big rocks medium-sized. All we're doing is really making gravel. It's just one of those things that you got to think through a little bit. And I'm just not seeing the payoff at the end of the road. And now I know some people have said, well, you know, that they're keeping us safe. Really? I don't know very many of the Taliban tribe leaders who are going to ride their camels over here. I'm missing something here. What you need is you need to do what we should have done from the beginning. Find bin Laden and do this in a stealth manner. Don't waste a whole bunch of resources. Don't waste your treasure. Don't waste the blood of your soldiers. You know, whatever happened to walk softly and carry a big stick? I mean, we seem to be walking anything but softly. Anyway, John Boehner. Interesting story here, John Boehner. If the Republicans take the House as anticipated on election night, voters can expect to hear the customary talk about coming together with Democrats for the good of the country. President Barack Obama inevitably will extend a hand across the aisle, but that's Tuesday. Right now, the tone is a lot different. Republicans are pledging to embrace an agenda for the next 2 years that sounds a lot like the agenda they had for the last two. Block Obama at all costs. And this is what I've been telling you all along. We're going to see nothing but gridlock. We're going to see nothing but obstruction, stall, and delay. John Boehner said, we're going to do everything, and I mean everything we can do to kill, stop, slow down, whatever we can. That's been their motive from the beginning. From the very beginning, it was about making the president fail. It was about doing whatever you could do to stop the president from succeeding.
I know what his plans are, as he has stated them. I don't want them to succeed. I hope he fails.
And that's been their mantra.
I hope he fails.
You know, every time you turn around, the Republicans are putting up roadblocks. And I can't stress how important Tuesday is enough. I can't. And, you know, at this point, if you haven't figured out who the enemy in all this is, we got some problems. Because the right keeps throwing their lies out there. Oh, Obama tripled our deficit. You mean like Reagan did and like Bush did? Remember that? Probably not. It didn't matter who the president of this country was going to be. We were going to have a $1.2 trillion deficit. Didn't matter if it was Obama or McCain. In 2009, we were going to have this massive deficit. Didn't matter. There are people out there who still don't realize that this president gave 95% of the people in this country a tax cut because 40% of the stimulus was wasted on tax cuts. And I said at the time they were wasted tax cuts. They could have been better spent. But the Republicans love to say, well, you know, the government going to spend your money better than you would. Let me be the first to say, and probably the only person in public ever to say, that I do believe in many circumstances, an investment in our infrastructure, in our education system, in our children, in our future, is probably better spent by our government than how we would spend our dollar. Because I got a whole house full of stuff that I really don't use. And I look at it and I go, boy, I misspent that. I wish I could have taken that and built a bridge with it. I wish I could have educated children with that money. And it's an argument that's very difficult to win, because it's saying that as an individual, I'm someone who spends my money at times in the wrong way. And I think we all do. I think we can all look around our house and go, yeah, you know what? Probably didn't need that. That exercise equipment that I bought, that's acting as a clothes hanger. Well, probably could have done away with that. Probably could have, you know, not bought that. But it's good for the economy. Keeps people working. I'm in favor of that. But I'm also in favor of smart investment. I'm also in favor of smart policy. And I point to, you know, where my daughter goes to school. They put a solar array up. They've got these panels that are going to create electricity for that school district for the next 50 years, at least. Going to take them completely off the grid. So no more electric bills. In fact, whatever they can conserve from their generation, they're going to be able to sell that back to the electric company and have someone pay them to create electricity. Smart investment. Wish we were doing it 30 years ago. Oh, yeah, we were. We had done that for 30 years ago. Jimmy Carter said, let's do that. In fact, gave a lot of tax incentives. Started an industry moving in that direction. There were people starting to put solar panels on their house. In fact, I know some folks who've had them that long. Still working. And then Ronald Reagan came in. Ripped the solar panels off the White House. Went back to good old-fashioned oil. Another symbolic gesture. And for all the folks who are unemployed right now, this stimulus package, it helped. It worked. It did what it was supposed to do. It saved you from going splat on the pavement. It saved you from falling through the cracks and being homeless and destitute. And earlier on in the program, we talked to Pat LaMarche from Safe Harbor about the amazing work they do there with limited resources. You were saved from that. And the thanks we're going to give is we're going to put crazy people in charge. The people who brought us this mess, we're going to put them back in power. And it's going to happen. I really do believe they're going to take the House. I think the Republicans will take the House. I don't think they're going to take the Senate, but I think they're going to take the House. And then what happens? You got Daryl Issa, the guy from California, saying, well, you know, impeachment's not something we're really kind of looking at right now. Really? That's one way to gridlock. That's one way to stall. That's one way to delay. That's one way to fire up your base. It's one way to get people all riled up and all twisted in the panties. They're good at that. They're outstanding at that. At a time when tuition rates for college students are going through the roof, we're going to have a federal government who's gridlocked. At a time when corporations are hoarding $1 trillion in cash of money that we handed them, unemployment's at record highs, and we're going to have a government that's gridlocked. Think that's a good idea? I don't. That's why it's so imperative that on Tuesday, November 2nd,
a vast virus database has been updated.
You get out and vote. That's why it's important. That's why it's essential. Stop and think about this. I'm going to leave you with one last thing. $415 million, almost $500 million in total outside spending. That's spending outside of the parties. Think about that. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the USP.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.